Good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing in Cleveland? That wasn't good enough. How's everybody doing in Cleveland this morning? Well, I am so excited to be here with you all today and to be here with you. I'm honored. I'm humbled. This is going to be an amazing day. Danny is primed and ready to roll today. And your lives, I hope you're ready to be changed today. Yes. I do have a few house cleaning or house, what do you call these? What is housekeeping? If I start cleaning up here, just go with it, all right? Well, come on in, grab your seat. This is going to be a packed, sold-out house. So if there is an empty seat, please help our ushers. Raise your hand. They have their hands in the air. We'll try to get everybody a seat. The seat that you have is your seat for today. So once you're camped out, and I know some of you do literally camp out, you've got food, you've got, I think, a tent, a sleeping bag, everything, which is awesome. But once you're in your seat, that's your seat for the day. So please honor that and honor everybody else with their seats as well. Your seat is your seat till tonight when there's a free session. I believe when we get out of here, so tonight's session will be, I believe, around 7. That session will be free game. Come get a seat. So get here early for that. All right. And welcome to everybody as well viewing abroad. We have people. This is exciting. Viewing abroad from Latvia. Some of those folks are here, obviously, too. The UK, Netherlands, Australia, and Canada. There we go. All right, on your seat, everybody should have one of these on your seat. If you don't have one of these, this is ethics agreement. It's at the top of your agreement. Just raise your hand if you don't have one. We'll get one to you. We got a few. What we're going to do is we're going to read through this together so that we all understand what we're agreeing to this weekend. This weekend is going to be an impactful weekend. I'm going to share a little bit of my story and what Danny's done for myself and my family in a moment and what I believe that she's going to do with you and your families this weekend, your finances, your marriages. Anybody want to see all those things go to another level? Yes. So, but in order to do that, we also want to agree on a few things together so that we're honoring each other and that this weekend goes in the best possible way so we all get as much as we can out of this weekend. Everybody want to get everything they can out of this weekend, right? Awesome. So let's read through it together. Everybody have it? So use your own name here. I, Jeff Usner, understand and agree to the following, that this seminar is an open seminar and that there are other people here this weekend, like myself, from their respective companies that have made a considerable investment in attending this seminar and developing their businesses. Deep breath. I understand and agree that I will honor and respect others in attendance at this event the entire weekend, and I will not represent myself, my company, my business, or DannyJohnson.com in an unethical manner. I understand that while I am encouraged to make new contacts and friends this weekend, that this event is not a recruiting forum or an opportunity to solicit others about my products, business, or opportunity. I understand that I'm responsible for my own actions, and if I'm found dishonoring others or their businesses here this weekend, I will be immediately asked to leave the seminar without refund, and I will not be allowed to attend any future Danny Johnson seminars. All right. That was a lot to read out loud. So if you could sign this and pass them to the middle, our ushers are going to pick those up. We could go ahead and take care of that, please. Thank you for bearing with us in this housekeeping, not house cleaning. Next thing I'll start on is our cell phones. Everybody have a cell phone? You can put them up. What I want you to do is take them out and put them on silent or turn them off. Let me just give you a little clue. I've been coming to Danny seminars for about, I believe, 11 years was my last one, or my first one that I came to. And you don't want to be the one who's in the audience when this goes off if Danny's on stage. So I would just encourage you, without going into more of it, She'll have fun with you, but you won't be happy that your phone was on. Let's put it that way. So I'm going to turn mine to mute because I don't want to be that person either. Also, there is no audio or video recording during the event. There are MP3s, audio recordings available to purchase. This event is recorded, so I would strongly encourage you to invest in that as well. I know I have sat through this event countless times, it seems, and I'll listen to the recordings and realize, or ask the question, was I at that event? I don't know if anybody's in here been to a couple events before, but I will hear something that Danny will say, and I'll be busy writing it down, which again, I encourage you to do. If you have a journal or you have a notepad, if you don't get one, and I'll write that thought down, and then I must miss the next 90 minutes sometimes, it seems like, because I'll go back through and I'll listen to the event that I was just at, and I'm like, man, was I really at this event? So please don't record this yourself. It is being professionally recorded and is available for you, and I would encourage you to invest in that. All right. Housekeeping and cleaning, I think, is done. Are y'all excited to see Danny this morning? You should be. You really should be. Danny Johnson has appeared on ABC's Secret Millionaire, The Oprah Winfrey Show, The Steve Harvey Show, Forbes, Fox and Friends. And honestly, if you haven't seen her, you're probably hiding under a rock. She has been all over the United States, all over the UK, really all over the world. And there's a reason for that. It's the message that she carries, the training that she carries is amazing. It's life-changing. For myself, I first came to an event, like I said, about 11 years ago, and I remember sitting in it, and the whole time sitting there with my arms crossed like this, and saying, man, if she would just put the mic down, I could probably teach this a lot better than her. I won't do that today, by the way. So that was my first event. And at that point in my life, I had made money, lost money, made money, lost money. I've done this in my business. Anybody ever have this in your businesses? The problem is my spending was always up here, right? It didn't matter what I made. I was deeper and deeper in debt. I was in more and more stress. In fact, 10 years ago, I had a stroke and almost died because of that. So that took a lot for God to kind of humble me and to start listening. And one of the first things I started to listen to was the financial part because I was very, very money motivated back then. And I was at a place where I was about $300,000 in debt and struggling in my business, struggling with clients, struggling in my marriage, struggling with my kids, not making any money. I remember coming into my house at the time and seeing the dinner table, and I literally dropped to my knees and started crying because I didn't know how I was going to put food on the table for my family. So it was a bad situation for me. I'd also lost one of my sons that year, a very transformational year for me. So then I had to get real. I had to get real with myself and get real with Danny's training. And I started to implement first War on Debt, which you're going to hear about in this event. I wiped out that debt in about 8 months' time. Within about 18 months, I was a multimillionaire. So I had major transformation happen in my life. I went on, followed kind of, Danny helped me to, appeared on ABC's Secret Millionaire, have been very successful in our businesses, our finances. We've been just blessed as a family to help build orphanages around the world, to literally give millions of dollars to people much more deserving of it than I am. So that's the financial side of it, which is exciting, right? A lot of you are here probably for finance. A lot of you might be here for other reasons as well. At the time, my marriage was struggling. It wasn't the marriage that I wanted. I'm looking in the audience here. I see my kids semi through the lights. I was struggling with my kids. They're waving. I was the guy on the airplane that you didn't want to be sitting anywhere near, all right? I was also the guy at the dinner table next to you at the restaurant whose kids were throwing food on your table. So all this was going on, all this to say, I started plugging into Danny's training on the finances. I started to plug into her training on my marriage, and my marriage is just amazingly blessed now. My kids, just seeing them here, you know, some of you, when we walked in, you know, they were so small, and now much bigger. But even more honoring than ever before. What happened very quickly with us is I couldn't get off an airplane without somebody literally handing me a note, writing it down, handing it to me, and go, man, when I first, and it would say stuff like, when I first got on this flight, I tried to get in their seat. I wanted to move to another area. But I got to tell you, your kids were the most well-behaved kids that I've ever been around on a flight. And now I watch my kids grow. Same thing. Just amazing wherever they go. They get awards for leadership. They're leaders in their school. They're leaders with their friends. They're leaders in their community. So I've had the financial change. I've had the marriage change. I've had the family seriously get rocked in a much better way. And many of you right now are here looking for answers in your finances. You may have prayed and screamed out loud, help me. Any of you like that? You don't have to raise your hand. I definitely was like that. Many of you might be in a marriage right now where you're just struggling and you're wondering, is this going to work? The stress of life is just weighing you down. And I know it. I had a stroke. I almost died. Many of you have kids that are like mine or even worse, right? And you're here looking for answers. You're looking for that one thing. And I got to tell you, you're in for a surprise this weekend. And I would just encourage you to just lay your ego aside. Lay your pride aside. Don't be like I was for the first few years. Come into this with an open mind. Be ready to receive. Sit up straight. Take notes and absorb every little detail that you can. Because it just takes one thing. And you're going to hear a lot of things this weekend. But it just takes one thing. And many of you have been praying for that one thing. And I believe that you're going to receive it this weekend if you're open to receiving it. Is anybody ready to receive it? So without further ado, I would love to welcome one of my dear friends, just an amazing person. And I'm going to shut up so she can get out here. Miss Dani Johnson.
So annoying. Hi. Good morning. I see at least 20 people have shown up. I'm so excited about that. You're so sweet. Well, Ohio. It's so good to be back here. I love coming to Ohio. Why are you all so quiet? Jeff was up here, I'm like, is he talking to nobody or something? This place is like super quiet. Is it because it's dark? Is it dark in here? Hi. Where are you from? Oh, let's try that again. Let's try overseas first. Who's from overseas? The UK. Hi, gorgeous. Okay, the UK is in the house. Where else? Yeah, you came from far away. That's a long flight, for sure. What part of Australia?
Melbourne.
I've been there. It's a nice place. Beautiful place. Lots of good food, actually, surprisingly, for Australia. Australia is not one of the places that I go to for food. Beauty, sharks, snakes, alligators. Everything that can kill you. Spiders. That's what's in Australia. I'm serious. Like, everything that can kill you fast is in Australia. I didn't learn that until I arrived there, and the driver who was driving us had told us that his friend's son was playing right where we were going and got eaten by a shark. I'm like, and we're turning the bus around, and we're going back home. This is crazy. So, oh, don't worry, man. There's spiders, there's alligators, there's snakes. Everything that can kill you is right here. This is why they didn't tell me this before I went to Australia. I've been 7 times. It's okay. It hasn't kept me away. I'm not afraid. Where else are you from? Meaning overseas. Latvia is in the house. Who just came from New Zealand? My gosh, you guys are world travelers. Okay, anybody else? Born in Guatemala. Okay. Okay, where's our Canadians? Yes, we're not that far away from you right now. And then the great state of, sorry, country of Texas. Because Texas really believes that she should be her own country. I agree, 100%. Again, that's true, even though we were only a country for 10 years, but we believe we should be again. What about California? New York. Pennsylvania. Virginia. Kansas. Missouri. That's all the states I know. I'm joking. North Dakota. One. One. Minnesota. They didn't have that far to drive either. Wisconsin. This is like the warm time of year for all you northerners, snow loving. Alabama. Woohoo. Ohio. There's 17 people here from Ohio. It's awesome. Whatever state I miss, who's from the United States of America? Doesn't sound like you're very excited to be from the USA. Jeez, I mean, Australia about busted a gut screaming at Australia. And you're like, yeah, I'm from the U.S. Who's from right here in Cleveland? Wow. That's awesome. Well, I've been doing a little bit of research on Cleveland especially. People here apparently are really nice and very welcoming and hardworking. That's not the reputation of a lot of places around the world, let alone this state. I mean, not this state, but the United States. But super hardworking and super accepting, and people of all walks of life, all kinds of culture, that's all blended together here in the great city of Cleveland. So I feel very welcomed here. And I'm glad to be here. This is, I think, my fourth time here in Cleveland, which I love. I love coming to this part of the country and to this part of Americans especially. Anyway, so enough about you. Let me talk about myself. My name is Dani Johnson, in case you thought there was an imposter up here. I'm simply a wife to Hans Johnson and a mother of five and a grandmother of eight. Big, huge accomplishment that has not happened outside of my body. But that's my family saying hello to you. My husband is the awesome-looking, amazing guy with the giant beard that's kind of gray. And those are my kids. We have two daughters, we have three sons, and we have five grandsons and three granddaughters. And we're on our way to 25 grandchildren, because that is what I've been brainwashing my kids with since they were very little, that they would at least produce 25 grandchildren while I've been on the planet. So they're doing pretty good. Only two kids have produced children so far, so I'm doing good. My ratios are really good. My fourth child is about to get married in October, but he has threatened they're going to wait for 5 years. Of course, I'm praying completely against that, because I need more grandbabies. Chop, chop. Even though Zion's only 9 months old, he's the little tiny one being held by the giant guy, the biggest guy in our family. Actually, Micah, I think, might be the biggest guy in the family now. Anyway, so even though Zion's 9 months old, Nona is crying out for more babies, especially girls. I would like to order about 10 more girls. That'd be awesome, because we are a very male-dominant kind of family. You can take the family picture off. They're all very good-looking. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah. Come on, don't you think they're cute? So, I'm a grandmother. I refuse to be called grandma, because that's my mother. It's not me. So, that's what I am. I'm also a businesswoman. I've been a businesswoman for almost 30 years. I started in business almost 30 years ago, which anytime you can say 20 years, it means you're old. Anytime you can say 30 years, we're just not going to talk about that. But it's been almost 30 years since I started in business. It's a little short time ago. And a lot has changed in the last 30 years. I've obviously learned a lot in the last 30 years. And my first business, I was a rip-roaring failure, largely due to, some of the history that I had come from. I was not born into a family of wealth. I was not born into a family that really had anything. I grew up on welfare in a violently abusive, drug-infested home. My parents that raised me were, they did every kind of drug you can imagine. So from, weed, all day, all night. I'd be getting ready for school and my dad would be rolling 20 joints in his blue boxer shorts because that's what Kmart used to sell. I don't know if they sell those blue boxer shorts anymore. I haven't really seen them around. But he was wearing those blue boxer shorts. He was 6'10", 350 pounds, and he rolled 20 joints in the morning as I'm on my way to kindergarten. And then when I came through the door at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, guess what he was doing? Rolling more joints. That's what he did. So neither one of my parents worked. My entire growing up life, I never once saw my parents get up, go to work, come home from work, ever. The only work they did was smoke a lot of weed, chew on a few munchies, and scream a lot. They also then went into other drugs, like cocaine and things in their, shoving needles in their arms and popping all kinds of pills. Prescription drugs was their candy. And so whenever my parents would come off of a downer, then they would be like, super irate. And there's just a lot of screaming. I was grabbed by the throat, shoved up against walls to be cursed at by a man that was nearly 7 feet tall. His anger and his rage was the size of his physical body. I grew up with two little sisters that also suffered very similar amount of abuse. Being the oldest, of course, the oldest has a tendency of getting it the worst. How many of you were the oldest in your family? How many of you noticed that, your parents were much more strict with you, and then by the time it got to the third born, anything went. They could see any movie they wanted to. They could stay the night at everyone's house. They could wear whatever clothes they wanted. How many of you witnessed this? Yes. So in our house, it wasn't so much about that. It was so much about the beatings and the screaming and all of that. Pretty much I was the brunt of most of what took place in our household. I was also molested from the time I was 3 until I was 16. I moved out of the house because of it. I was done being violated. And honestly, there was nothing that my mother would do about it. There was nothing that anybody could do about it. So I just said, I'm out. I'm done. I can't handle it anymore. So I was not the picture-perfect person to start in business and to succeed in anything. To be honest with you, my biggest job that I was the most successful person in my family was at JCPenney's. Yep, at the mall. I was 19 when I got that job, and I thought, man, I had died and gone to heaven. I was more successful than anyone in my family had ever become. So that kind of gives you a general idea of the financial status of our family. No college educations anywhere. Television was the only education that was happening in our household. There was music or television going 24/7. There was never any quiet and no peace. My father also abused my mother, who was 5'5", and when I was 11, she broke her neck. So quite honestly, when I moved out at 16, I just wanted to run as far as I possibly could from anything that represented the family that I was raised in. There was nothing functional. There was not a lot of happiness. There wasn't a lot of joy. There wasn't family vacations. Do you understand? This wasn't a Leave It to Beaver household. I just have a question for you. Does anybody here grow up in the Leave It to Beaver household? There's about 10 of us. That's pretty awesome. Yay! We all grew up jacked up. Awesome. I am so in the right room. So whether your family had divorces or, infidelity or abuse or drugs or whatever, how many of you qualify in dysfunction? Awesome. Okay. Well, we are all starting at the same spot, which I love. So I tried to get as far away from anything that was familiar to my family. And when I was 19, I met somebody who was 10 years older than I was. We began to date, and he came from the right side of the tracks, if you will. He had the education, right? He went to college for 10 years. Oh, that's him. That's JP. He was just at my house for a week. He and his 92-year-old mother. So he and I started a date. This is about that time. I think I'm about 20 at that point. Fortunately, that's not zoomed in real well, so you can't see my unibrow. But anyway, but you can see my giant hair. So JP actually introduced me to the business community. His family, his dad was in insurance. All 5 of the kids were highly educated. He went to UCLA. His mom had an education. Everybody was like this, just They had a really nice house on the golf course. Do you understand what I'm saying? They drove Mercedes Benz. It's like, wow, I was in the wrong neighborhood. Like, I've never been in a neighborhood like this before. I'd never been in a house like that before. So it was really like eye-opening to me. I thought, man, this is the way to live versus where I had lived. So he brought me to my very first business opportunity meeting. I didn't know what I was looking at, didn't know anything about business. Honestly, I didn't know that normal people could start a business, quite honestly. I thought you had to be educated with a degree, and in order to, like, succeed in anything, you know, because I was told my whole life if I didn't go to college and get a degree, then I certainly wouldn't have any kind of success at all. I'd never make any money. So I didn't think that I was qualified for any kind of business. So I get started. I see this business. It takes me like 2 months to get the courage to do anything, to actually get started. He badgered me for 2 solid months. He followed up with me again and again. And then I finally decided to get started in business. And my first 6 months, I was the best failure, I think, that they had ever seen. I didn't make a dime. I couldn't get anything going. Everybody I would try to present my product and our service to was just like either too busy, they didn't have the money to talk to their spouse, they fell off the face of the planet, nothing was working. I was literally paying my rent from my credit cards, making my car payment from my credit cards, buying food from my credit cards. I had no income at all because I walked away from my full-time job, which was probably my first big business and financial mistake that I made, thinking that somehow with no experience, I'm going to somehow make this work. Have you ever made a big financial mistake before? Cool. I probably have made about 1,000 more than you have, and you just have some catching up to do. Anyway, so my first 6 months, I failed until I met somebody who had an amazing amount of success who had started the same time I did. And this young man was about 4 years older than I was. He did have a college degree, but for some reason, I didn't think that's what qualified him to be successful. I begged him to teach me to crawl, walk, then run. I literally begged him. I said, please treat me as though I know absolutely nothing. I need to learn how to make money. In fact, I kind of need it like now. My credit cards are nearing a maxed out state, and I don't want to fail. So long and the short of it is that he gave me 4 guidelines. These 4 guidelines have shaped the rest of my life. We're going to talk about those 4 guidelines this morning. Next, he introduced me to a training seminar that was being done by a multimillionaire. And I obviously didn't have the money to go. I obviously was maxing out on my credit cards. I wasn't generating any income. So how in the world can I justify paying for a training seminar? How in the world can I justify the travel of it? I had never flown anywhere by myself. I had never stayed in a hotel room, my God, by myself. Like, I was, and I hated crowds of people. Isn't that funny? I did not like large groups of people. I was that kind of person that at a party, I would be standing in the back kind of observing. I was super intimidated by people. I hated talking to people. I did not like being around people, especially that I did not know. I wasn't the popular kid in school. I played basketball so I could hurt people. So I wasn't the kind of person that, you know, I wasn't the prom queen. I wasn't most likely to succeed. Do you understand? I, in fact, the school that I went to had a very small graduating class. One. And it was me. Yes, I graduated from high school. It was me. I actually dropped out my senior year and went back and finished at the end. I had 4 classes left to finish, so I actually did drop out of school until April. No, May. Yeah. So from May to mid-June, I finished. I was good. I'm not going to tell you how I finished. That I finished. Anyway, so from that first business and going to that first training, shortly after, within 8 days applying the information, I made $4,000 with the same business, with the same product, with the same manufacturer, with the same area, in the same state, with the same person. So you have to ask yourself, what in the world could have changed in 2 days? The same thing that's going to change for you in the next 3 days. Same thing. The next month, I made $11,000, $15,000, $20,000. Then I met and married a guy that I knew for 7 days. That was really smart. I was 21 at the time, and within a few months, I end up homeless, embezzled, with $35,000 in debt, $2.03 to my name, and completely suicidal. This was not the first time I was suicidal. The first time I tried to commit suicide, I was 6 years old. So this was normal thinking for me. I had this small little stint, about 6 months worth of success, wished I had never had it, and wanted to kill myself because I had lost it. So my ex-husband turned out to be sleeping around, you know, within 30 days of us getting married, and then he just decided that this needed to be the way that we had our marriage. And I figured, I don't think I could do that. So long and the short of it, he's 3,000 miles away, he's in Japan, I'm in the state of Hawaii, and I'm homeless, and I'm ready to just end it all, and I had wished I had never tasted success because it was better if I had lived my negative, pathetic life that I had before I had that success. From there, I started a business from the trunk of my car and a payphone booth with nothing but a piece of scratch paper. Managed to use some skills that I had learned in those training seminars to communicate with a telecom community company to get a voicemail with the check on the way because I obviously didn't have any money. And my first 10 hours working at starting a business from the trunk of my car in a payphone booth, made $2,000 the first 10 hours. The next 30 hours, I made $6,500. Quit my full-time job that I was working as a cocktail waitress and made over 10 grand, then 14 grand. My income got to over $80,000 a month, 10 months after I was homeless. Bought my first house 12 months after I was homeless. Made $250,000 my first year. Made my first million by the time I was 23. Today, I'm a multimillionaire. And I've been a multimillionaire for many, 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 many years. Today, if you were to tell me 28 years ago, when I was young and foolish and knew nothing about business, knew nothing about finances, knew nothing about life, that one day that I would be on the Oprah Winfrey Show, I would have told you you're freaking crazy. If you would have told me that I'd been on hundreds of television interviews, like I'd be on Fox, Fox and Friends, that I'd be on CNN, ABC, CNBC, MSNBC, name the CBCs, whatever. I would have told you you're out of your mind, pull your head out. If you would have told me that I would have been the season premiere of Secret Millionaire, I would have told you, you know, shut that up, because that was the language that I used back then. If you would have told me that I would be an international best-selling author, yeah, sure, whatever, you're smoking crack. There's no way in a million years. And if you would have told me I'd be traveling around the world, that I'd be happily married, that I would have 5 children, I still would tell you you're nuts, crazy, and stupid. Because there's no way that someone like me could ever have this kind of success. And I haven't even told you the success. I haven't even told you the craziest things that have happened in my life that should have never happened. So I'm not here to turn you into a fan. I'm not here to have you say, wow, Danny Johnson is awesome. I'm here to basically obliterate the mindsets perhaps that have held you from becoming what it is that you're called to be. That's what I'm here to do. I'm not here to turn you into somebody who walks out of here and says, wow, that was a great seminar, because if that was the case, then I was your entertainer. And I'm not your prostitute, I'm not your pastor, and I'm not your politician, of which everyone can promise you and pretty much deliver you nothing. I am here to make sure you get results, and that's going to be a team effort. That's going to be between you and me. I am not here to entertain you for 3 days. I am not here to tell you something new, because there's nothing new under the sun. But I am here to break it down, make it plain, a simple path for you to pay off all of your debt in the next 5 to 7 years, for you to be able to grow your career and your finances to double, triple, quadruple, all 10 times your income. I'm here to show you exactly how I went from a homeless, broke cocktail waitress to a multimillionaire who gives 100% of my income away. So if you're sitting here counting, you know, oh, there's 1,000 people in the room and everyone paid X amount, if that's how you think I get paid, think again. I actually don't take a salary from my company. So the you being here is actually paying for orphans to eat. You being here is actually taking care of people who are sick, taking care of the elderly that your family has forsaken. We are here taking care of the widow. The government forces me, because of the structure of our business, for me to take a salary. At the end of the year, a check is signed over to me, and I turn it over. I sign it over to King's Ransom Foundation, which is the only charity that I trust that takes care of the widow, the sick, and the orphan. So no salary ever hits my bank account. So I'm here as a volunteer for you, which means you have to be nice to me. That's what that means. That's what that means. So I am not another greased, palmed, greased shoot of a person in leadership who's here to get rich on you. No, I am here to teach you how to create wealth And in your lifetime, faster than you thought that you could, yeah. I'm here to show you how to do it without you becoming hated by your children or your spouse. I'm here how to show you how to get it all and then some, more than you ever thought was even possible. I'm here how to show you to get it without sacrificing fun or your health or the most important relationships in your life. I've worked part-time for the last 21, almost 22 years. I have found a simple formula to not sacrifice my life for money, but how to put money in the right place and let it grow for me versus me being a slave to it. So if you are at all interested in anything like what I'm talking about, then you might want to shut up, shut that mind up, sit down, you're doing that, and pay attention, because we are not on trial, you are. What do you mean, Danny Johnson, I'm on trial? Because your current lifestyle, where you're at, is on trial. It is. We have a proven track record. You do too. And if you're not happy with it, you might have to learn a few things. So I'm going to share with you 8 characteristics this morning of the truly wealthy people. I'm not talking about rich people. Many rich people die broke. Many rich people die broke. Just because someone makes $1 million in a year doesn't mean they're rich. Just because someone makes $10 million a year doesn't mean that they're rich. Riches, in my opinion, in my experience, run faster than you can. But wealth is accumulated little by little. And here at First Steps to Success, you're going to learn the beginning steps of creating wealth. In the very beginning of my career, I made a lot of money, and I spent all of it, and I spent a bunch more. How many of you ever spent more than you made? Yes. I did a lot of that. And in doing a lot of that, I've learned some really hard lessons. So we're going to talk about 8 characteristics of the truly wealthy. I'm talking about financially independent people. I'm not talking about people who make a lot of money. Yes, they make a lot of money, but it's what you keep. It's not how much you make. And so there's many people being able to create wealth on a little bit of money, to be honest with you. Not a lot. In fact, I know of a teacher, a school teacher, that wasn't even an old school teacher, that hadn't even maxed out their school teacher salary yet, and yet managed to accumulate over $1 million on a school teacher's salary. You have to scratch your head and go, how is that possible? Because there's some things that maybe you might want to learn how to do with money that man learned how to do with money that changed everything for him. How many of you are here because you want more money? How many of you are here because you want to pay off debt? How many of you like to be completely debt-free? How many of you are looking for peace of mind? Awesome. How many of you are looking for better relationships? How many of you want to make more with less time? Yes. How many of you would like to have a career that you are satisfied with, meaning that it's satisfying, it's fulfilling, it's life-giving to you? Okay, well, we're going to show you how to get all of that here, even if nothing in your life changes, meaning the career is the same career that you have, the relationships are the same relationships that you have, but everything inside of here changes on how you approach it and changes how you deal with those particular people that, you know, you love so much. Anyway, so let's get right down into it. Eight characteristics of the truly wealthy. Why would we talk about those people? Well, I have to tell you this. When I went to my very first training seminar, something fell from the stage that just blew my head apart. And here's what it was. That if you want to be successful, you got to learn from successful people. Find somebody who has what you want and learn from them. Do what they do. It's not like do the same career that they do, but approach your career as they approach theirs. Do the same mindset that they do. Understand how they think. Understand how they approach life, how they make decisions. And so when I heard that was just like, wow, I'm going to study successful people, right? Rather than studying algebra again, I'm going to study successful people. And this was really, really helpful to me. So this was something that I started to do 28 years ago, and it really helped to shape my life, because then anytime I don't know how to do something, I'm going to find someone who knows how to do it and do it well based on their track record. They have a track record, and let's say if you want to become a millionaire, who does it make sense to learn from? Right? You don't ask your uncle who's a janitor and been a janitor for 35 years how to make $1 million. He has no freaking clue. Okay? You don't ask your neighbor who's on welfare how to go into business. Do you understand? So if you want success, you find somebody who has success and you learn from them, study them, pay attention to what it is that they're talking about, how they talk, what they're dealing with, the kind of things that they're involved with, and do what they do. And so this is why we're going to start with these 8 characteristics. Now, I've been studying successful people for 28 years. That's a long, no, 29. Oh my gosh. That's a long time that I've been studying successful people. There's a few things that I picked up along the way, and I actually did these particular things, and after doing these things, I'm blown away. It worked. It totally worked. Okay, and I'm one of those really simple people. I'm not somebody who's like super smart in fact, I didn't read my first book till I was 21 years old. I had dyslexia. Do you understand? So the words move around on a page. I'm not the smartest person in my family, for sure. I'm definitely not the smartest person in this room. I'm pretty simple, but I'm really good at following directions. And so I would be one that always be asking successful people, how did you do it? What could you advise me to do? Like, what's the number one thing that you think is important to become successful? Or what's the number one thing that you did in business or in your career that you feel really, really helped you? And so I'm going to give you what these things are. I've accumulated these things for years. So number one, the truly successful, the truly wealthy, okay, that means wealth in every area of their life. I'm not just talking about finances, because we all know people who have made it rich, whose family hates them. They've been married and divorced, you know, 8 times. That's a lot of alimony. They have kids that hate them. Do you understand? They have to pay people to just be around them because no one wants to be around them. How many have ever seen people like this? Okay, they've got drug problems or alcohol problems. They got all kinds of problems. They got lots of money, but they're absolutely miserable. And how many of you don't want to be a wealthy, miserable person? Okay, good, because we're not going to teach you how to do that. We're going to teach you how to have happiness and balance in your life and lots of wonderful vacations and a good lifestyle and wealth at the same time. So number one is vision. Each one of these people that I've had the chance to study, whether they're reading their books, working one-on-one with them, doing business deals with them. My husband and I did a business deal with a billionaire. We got to observe how a billionaire did business, like up close and personal, as we sold him a piece of real estate out in Bora Bora. We got to observe how things are done, and it's pretty exciting. So anyway, number one is they have vision. Okay, now there's 2 populations that are on the planet. This pretty much fits all over the world. 98% of the population that's dead or dead broke at the age of 65, and 2% of the population that is doing well financially. I'm going to say that again. 98% of the population that's dead or dead broke at the age of 65, 2% of the population that is financially independent. Now, again, it doesn't matter how much you make that determines whether or not you are in the... Wow, that board is interesting. I feel like I'm going to fall over it. Okay, 2% of the population, 98% of the population, okay? Now, most people are going to end up here, okay? This is most people. With degrees, do you understand? Entrepreneurs, even people who've made $1 million usually end up dying in the 98%. Usually even I know people who, you know, made $11 million and died a 98%er. So it doesn't have anything to do with how much you make. It has everything to do with how much you keep. Financial independence is based on how much you keep. And little by little is how you end up here. So don't necessarily go, oh, that guy makes, you know, $10 million a year. He's going to be rich. No, he might be spending $12 million a year. Do you understand? You never, ever know. And there are people that literally do that. So 98 and 2%. So the difference between these two populations are going to be these 8 characteristics. How many of you do not want to end up dead or dead broke at the age of 65? How many of you do not want to end up dependent on your family, friend, or federal government for your main source of income? Now, you have to think about this. Of your friends, your family, or the government, how many of them are going to be so willing to take care of you? Are any of them going to pay for your long-awaited vacation? No, they're not. They're absolutely not. Yet, this is what people are hoping and basing their future on, is based on, okay, well, Social Security will take care of me to the tune of $1,100 a month, to the tune of $2,600 a month if you had a very successful business and you poured into it for 30 years, you wind up with $2,600 a month. That's like, hello, $30,000 a year. You couldn't live off of that when you were working full-time. Now all of a sudden, you're going to live off of that when you're not working. Does that make any sense? This is why we see people retiring and ending up in an apartment, alone, not going anywhere. How many of you, that's not the vision you have for your future? So you have to establish a vision. What I've noticed about 2% of the population is they've got vision and they got a big vision. Where does vision come from? Largely, it comes from being around other people who have vision. Very few people that they birth vision out of themselves. Vision usually is stimulated by other people, whether it's stimulated by bad circumstances or it's stimulated by somebody else who is chasing a vision. Vision is something that's hugely important. Why? I know you've heard this truth before, that a man without a vision will perish. I'm going to say it again. A man without a vision will perish. That includes women. Just saying. Men and women without a vision will perish. And so largely my vision when I was young, when I was first starting in business, was to just get married to a guy that wouldn't beat me or hopefully the three children that I would have. That was Danny Johnson's vision. Let me marry a guy that doesn't beat me or won't beat my children. How many of you think that's a pretty small vision? So the question I have for you is, what's yours? What's your vision? Why are you here? What do you want to do with yourself? If you knew you couldn't fail, what would you do with your life? Why do you wake up in the morning? What are you working towards? You came to this event for something. Why are you here? So vision. If you have no vision for your career, you're not going anywhere. If you have no vision for your marriage, the marriage is going nowhere. You have no vision for your kids. You're going to produce 98%ers, brats who use you as an ATM machine, who think they're entitled to your bank account because you work too much. If you have no vision for your health, what will your health become? Vision dictates everything in our life. Everything. And if we don't establish what we want and where we want to go, then we'll end up with whatever leftovers there is. And how many of you don't want more leftovers? You'll end up producing what your family produced. Now, based on the hands that were raised up, you all said that you came from jacked up families. How many of you don't want your parents' marriage? How many of you don't want your parents' finances? How many of you don't want your parents' health? My parents' health was 17 bottles of pills on each side of the nightstand. That was their lifestyle. Fighting, strangling each other, beating each other, fighting over money all the time. Even after my mom broke her neck and they got a settlement for this, by the time I was 14, all of a sudden our finances and our family life changed. I was there for only 2 years of it, but everything changed and they still were fighting over the same thing. They were still running out of money every single month. When they were on welfare, they ran out of money. And then when she got her settlement, they were getting monthly installments. She was still running out of money. So how many of you don't want where you came from? If you don't want where you came from, then you have to establish, what do I want? If you don't figure out what you do want, you're going to only repeat what you've seen. This is how us humans work. You will repeat where you came from if you do not establish where you're going. So there must be a vision not only for your finances. There must be a vision not only for your health, for your marriage, for your kids. Because if you don't have a vision for any of those things, you will repeat everything you've already walked through. Hello, you've heard the statement, history repeats itself. And you will largely become everything that you've been trained to be if you don't establish a new path for yourself. This is how 50% of all marriages end in divorce. The statistics are proven that kids who come from a divorced home, guess what happens? They end up divorced. It's high 90% that you have a chance of ending divorce if you came from a divorced family. How many of you came from a divorced family? Me too. A divorce I didn't even know about, which was really awesome. Yeah, that was cool. When I was 17 and a half and pregnant, that went over really well in a town of 700 where we had more churches than there were gas stations. I got 17, pregnant out of wedlock, and I find out that the man that raised me was not my dad, but that my real dad came from Managua, Nicaragua. Where? What state is that? I had never heard of it. I told you I wasn't very smart in school. That was, kind of shocking. So divorces, I was adopted by the guy who raised me. I was ready to repeat everything, and I did repeat some of the things that my family did, largely out of ignorance, the others without dealing with some of the stuff that came from my past. So, vision. What's your vision? What's the vision you have for your life? And don't forget a category in your life. Your health is important. Your marriage is important. Your kids are important. Yes, your finances are important. Yes, your career is important. Yes, your fun life is important. All of those things are important. But if we don't establish what we want to do, we largely are never going to do it. But worse, we're going to repeat what we've already seen. So let's talk about vision. Do you remember when you were 18, super young, and were super confident? How many of you remember that? Okay, now you remember you couldn't wait to get out of the house, so you could do what? What were you going to do? Because some people said college. Okay, how many of you, like, you couldn't wait to go out and do anything you wanted? Okay, well, what was the anything that you wanted to go do? What were you going to go do? Say what? Say again. Yes, travel the world. How many of you, that was one of your goals? Okay, so again, this, you had a vision in the beginning. How many of you wanted to travel? Where did you want to go?
Hawaii.
Hawaii, everywhere. Everywhere is not specific. Nothing becomes dynamic until it becomes specific. Where'd you, someone wanted to go to France, wanted to go to Bora Bora. Where else did you want to go?
Italy,
Israel, Switzerland. Switzerland's gorgeous. New Zealand, Australia, Great Wall of China. That's on my list. Africa, how many of you want to do an African safari? That's on my list. I'm going to do that next year. Okay, so you wanted to travel, okay? And what were some other things that you had? Like when you were 18, you couldn't wait to get out of the parents' house. You're going to go knock the world, you know, on fire, grab it by the, I got this thing, right? Okay, where were you going to go? I mean, what else did you want to do? So we got travel. What else did you want to do? Who wanted a big house? Just going to have a big old house, right? So we'll call it a mansion, right? You wanted a mansion, okay? And if you have a mansion, what else did you need? You need a maid, okay? Oh, you got to have yourself a chef, right? Because how many of you do not want to cook, right? You don't want to cook, but how many of you want to eat, okay? And how many of you really love to eat food that you didn't have to cook, right? And how many of you know there are people out there that can cook better than you? Even if you're an awesome cook, how many of you know there are people out there that can cook better than you, right? Okay, cool. So you got to have a chef, right? And you got to have a pastry chef from France. I'm telling you, man, that stuff is so... I'm actually quivering right here, right now, just thinking about that food. Okay, you need an Italian chef, and you need a Chinese chef, and don't forget the Mexican food. Oh my gosh, I've traveled all over the world and Mexican food is still my favorite. But the bread from France and the dessert from France, there's nothing like it. Okay, so you have a chef, you have a maid, you have a mansion, you're traveling. What else did you have on your list of things that you must accomplish? Oh, you got to have your own airplane. Well, you don't want a plane. Those are, you need a jet. Right? The, you know, little single engine, you know, Cessnas, 172s. Yeah. Oh, someone says they needed to be famous, right? Gotta be famous, right? Because if you're not famous, you're a nobody, and you're sick and tired of being a nobody, you know, or nobody through school. I want to be famous one day. Okay, what else? What else? Okay, someone said a yacht. Okay, who here wanted a yacht? Who wanted a yacht? Come on, we are in Ohio. Look at that lake that looks like an ocean out there. That's just amazing to me. Who wanted a yacht? Yeah. Okay. And if you have a yacht, you got to have yacht clothes. You have to have yacht clothes with the yacht. You cannot wear your normal clothes on a yacht. Okay. It's just white. Everything's white. It's all good. White and flowy. Okay. All right. So you have a yacht. You're famous. You have a maid. You have a chef. You have a mansion. You've got a jet. You're traveling. What were some other things that you wanted to do? Oh, someone said a car. A car with a mansion? What kind of Lamborghini? Okay, so we've got a Lamborghini. All right, we're not just going to have a minivan. Okay, so we got a Lamborghini. Yes, we got to be rich. Well, of course, all of these things pretty much denote that, baby, right there. Okay, so here we go. So we got all these things that we said we were going to do. Did anyone graduate from high school wanting to do something for charity? Okay, it's like 25 people. Okay, so got to do something for charity, right? All right, so here's all these list of things, all right? So this was like the beginning of vision when you were 18 years old, all right? So you wanted to be famous, have a fast car, you wanted to do a little bit for charity, have a yacht, all of these great things that you said that you wanted to do, right? And then what came along with this, and this is what we call a dream circle. I'm sure you've seen this before. But there's another circle that was brought in at the same time of your dream circle, your dream board, and it was called an income circle. Watch carefully. Okay. So you have your income circle. Wait, no, Danny, that wasn't my income circle. I went to college, and I got a master's degree. There you go. Here's your master's degree. There it is right there. Okay. And no, but Danny, I kept going to college and I got myself a PhD. So there's your income circle. And here's what happens. 98% of the population looks at this dream circle and begins to do this. Travel? You know, I'm just so busy and I'm working so hard and we only get 2 weeks vacation every single year. And, you know, I got to clean the garage. And, you know, my wife is nagging at me. I got the garage, you know, the garage seems to be the extra trash can. And so the garage needs to be cleaned out. And you know what? I mean, if we don't go to our family reunion once a year up in Wisconsin, then we're going to be ostracized. We have to go to Wisconsin at least once a year. And if we don't, our family's just going to have a hissy fit. And not only that, but I mean, we have so much fun. We scrapbook. We make tapioca. We have so much fun in Wisconsin. My cousins from Minnesota and Michigan, they all come. We get in a Winnebago and we get out there. We have some barbecues if the weather's nice. It's just a really cool thing. So, I mean, travel, I mean, it'd be great to travel to places like Greece, but I mean, we can't, you know, we have to go to Wisconsin for the family reunion and have tapioca and scrapbook, play some football, and I have to clean the garage. But the Travel Channel. Now that is something. A Travel Channel, man, I can't get enough of it. You know, me and Beatrice, we sit in our matching lazy boy chairs, and we've got that giant remote control, and we just sit there with our Easy Mac from the microwave, and we just sit there and we watch, and we get to experience Greece. We look at it, there it is, it's Greece. You can almost smell the food. Because here's the facts. The prices to go to Greece are expensive. Not only that, but once we got there, we have to take a boat to go to the island that we want to go. That's even expensive. I'm afraid of boats. Not only that, we would never be able to afford any attractions. I mean, it would just cut the money we have, all we make from our jobs, there's just enough for a plane ticket and the hotel stay. We would never be able to go eat. We wouldn't be able to go see all the attractions. It's too expensive anyway. The economy's bad. It's just not going to work. And then President Trump, forget about it. So travel, no, listen, sometimes Southwest has one-way tickets to Los Angeles for $99. That's on our list of things to travel to. A mansion? Listen, Bufus and I have been living in the same house for 35 years, and it's a nice house. And I want to tell you about this house. We have avocado green shag carpet. They're bringing that back now. But see, the kind that they made us back in those days, it was made in the United States of America. None of this China crap. It lasts forever. And not only that, but I have my Formica countertops. They're indestructible. And on my backsplash, I have that beautiful gold dust with the white. It's wonderful. And then I also have my coil stove that's chocolate brown. And I have my marigold refrigerator. They don't make these things like this anymore. You can't kill this thing. It is lasting forever. I'm going to will it to my grandchildren when I'm done with it. Yes, we only have 1,500 square feet, but we have love in these walls. My children were raised in this house, and now my grandchildren are running through this house. So what? We had to double mortgage it when Johnny wanted to go to college, of which he's not using that degree.
But look, we don't have a big yacht to take care of. It's all simple maintenance. It's wonderful. You know, by the time we're 75, hopefully it'll be paid off. Who needs a mansion? You know what happens in mansions? Most of it gets closed off. You never get into it. They got 12 toilets. People will pee in them. I only got 2 toilets to clean. That's all I need. A maid? Yeah, right. Do you know how much they cost? I checked out the local housekeeping service. She's charging $18 an hour. Forget you, honey. I'll scrub my own poop off my own toilets. A chef? Oh, now that would be nice. You know, Chef Boyardee and I have been very good friends for a very long time. I'd be famous? Oh, geez. You know, that's when I was young and I was stupid and I thought I could sing. Now, you know, I sound like J-Lo in the shower. But I'm not famous. I have one person who loves me for sure here. That's my friend Mona. I bring her from California every time to make me feel better about myself. Anyway, Lamborghini, do you know what happened if you drove your Lamborghini to Walmart? You still gotta go to Walmart. So do you know what happened if you drive your Lamborghini to Walmart? You'd end up having to park in the nosebleed section, first of all, right? You have to park in the nosebleed section because you know how those people are. They're jealous. You know what jealous people do? They key your car. Do you know what the cost of a paint job on a Lamborghini is? It ain't the same at Les Schwab. Okay? So it's not going to work. So a Lamborghini, give me a break. People are going to key your car. Not only that, what a terrible thing. We live in the city. You can't ever drive fast. Why would anyone have a Lamborghini in the city? I have Alice. She's a 1970 Woody station wagon, Chevy. We have 2 rust spots on the hood. When she blew up one time, she works great now. The windshield wipers don't work. It's okay. My hand works really great. I got long arms, see? I don't need no Lamborghini. They're stupid anyway. They sit too low. They're ugly. They're stupid. It's just for people who want to look like they're rich. A yacht? Listen, every once in a while, you know my neighbor? He's got one of them aluminum boats. You know what I'm talking about, right? These things are awesome, man. They got the right? And so every once in a while, you know, my wife, she lets me out of the house on the weekends. Of course, after I mowed the yard, after I weeded, of course, after I made sure the trash was out, of course, after I made sure the attic was organized. But anyway, my buddy and I, we grabbed a pack of Pilsner. It's cheap. It's on sale. And we head out on the lake. I have a gallon jug where the top is cut off, and I get the water out of the boat. And he drives it. Sometimes we switch. Sometimes we catch something. Most of the time we throw it back. I don't like fish. But a yacht, who needs one anyway? If you had a yacht, you have to wear those stupid white clothes. And you have to drink champagne. I hate champagne. I like my cheap beer. It's just not who I am. I'm just not a yacht person. A private jet? What the heck do I need one of them for? Southwest, everyone's first class. cheap flights, free bags, everyone's first class. Charity? Hey, listen, the bucket gets passed. I throw in a couple pennies, nickels, and dimes. I do what I can, all right? In the Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket, it's all good. I mean, I sponsored a kid once in Africa for $25 a month. But, you know, the economy tanked, and I just couldn't afford $25 a month anymore. So 98% of the population creates excuses as to why they cannot achieve what they thought they wanted to achieve. 2% of the population focuses on growing their income circle. 98% of the population shrinks their dreams to be just a little bit bigger than their reality so they don't die. 2% of the population focuses on growing and creating wealth so that the result of that wealth means that they can go and do the things that they want to do. But the question I have for you is, has it been since you were 18 that you dreamed? Is that the last time that you had any vision? And was this the vision? Question I have for you is, what is your personal definition of success? We've been fed pictures of success. Yeah. We've been marketed to, we've been sold what success is supposed to look like. And we've been sold it by really savvy marketers. But when you really look at it, is it what you want? Is it why you're here? If you don't define success for you, you're going to chase things that don't matter to you. You see, success was sold to me when I was 19 starting in business, and I was told that was success. Every single thing inside of that circle, that was success. That if I had those things, then I would be successful. Then everybody would respect me if I lived in a big house and I traveled around the world and I had a private jet and had a yacht and I had nice clothes and lots of bling. Then I would be viewed as someone respectful. I'd be honored and I'd be respected. And guess what happened? Guess what I found out? I chased those things for the first 10 years of my life. And I found out it was a big, fat lie. None of it mattered. None of it meant anything to me personally. Why? Because it wasn't my personal definition of success. I was chasing what somebody else told me was success. So I wasted the first 10 years of my life. I did. First 10 years in business. Spending money on that. Only to end up with more stress, more pressure, and things that I really truly didn't matter to me that I really didn't want. So I want to save you 10 years on your life. And ask you the question, what is your personal definition of success? What matters to you? Because there are some things more important than money. And I challenge you now, what are three, just three, things that are more important to you than money? Write them down. Three things more important than money. When we don't establish what those three things that are more important than money for us, then our identity becomes the things that are in that circle. Our identity becomes what society has told us is success. And I've seen people kill themselves for stuff. I've seen people declare bankruptcy for stuff. I've seen people end up divorced because of stuff. I've seen people battle and divorce for years because they fought over a stupid rug. Why? No vision. There was anything working towards. No vision that was truly defined by themselves. Why are you on this planet? Why were you knitted together in your mother's womb? You're not here just taking up space. You're here for a purpose. You're here with a destiny. And if you're not careful, you'll be programmed like 98% of the population for mediocrity. Yeah. Forever chasing things that don't matter and dying miserable with a life of misery behind you. So 98% creating their excuses. One of the very first things that that young man told me, one of the four guidelines that he gave me was, he told me if I gave him a single excuse, he wouldn't work with me. The definition of an excuse is a well-planned lie. The definition of an excuse is a well-planned lie. And I simply did that demonstration to show you how we create excuses to not achieve the things that we say we want to do. We have excuses about our health. Well, you know, my mom was obese. That's why I'm obese. My sisters were obese. That's why. Well, that was my excuse for a long time, too. My mom was 280 pounds. My sisters were both 300 pounds. My dad was 350 pounds. So that was my excuse, that it was okay for me to be heavy. I'm big boned. It runs in the family. It's genetic. How many of you know people who've used that excuse? I know no one here has used that excuse, but you know people who've used that excuse. I did too. You see, we take on the programs of our family, which brings me to number two. 2% of the population has an unusual way of thinking, a very unusual way of thinking. In fact, the only thing that separates 98 and 2% is the way they think. That's it. They've done studies on highly successful people and those that are not, and they have found that both populations grew up in bad circumstances or in great ones, that some were highly educated, some were not. In fact, most of the millionaires and billionaires that I've had the chance to study from, some of them had a ninth grade education, never even finished high school, definitely never went to college. So how is that possible? Some that grew up in poverty, some that didn't grow up in poverty. But the only thing that determined whether or not somebody ended up in that financial independence category simply was the way they thought. That's it. Simply the way that they thought. And so how do you think about money? How do you think about people? How do you think about your future? How do you think about politics? How do you think about the God category? Really largely is determined by how someone taught you how to think. They conditioned you, trained you, programmed you to think the way you think right now. And if you've been surrounded by 98%ers your entire life, there's a good chance you've got some 98% thinking. And 98% thinking leads to broke, dead, or dead broke at the age of 65, dependent on someone else. How many of you do not want to be dependent on someone else? When I was 20 is when I heard that number. And I didn't believe the number until I was in McDonald's one day at 20 years old, watching an elderly woman washing the table with a stack of trays. She would grab the stack of trays. She was a tiny little thing, completely hunched over, little old lady, stack of trays. Move the stack of trays to the next table, wipe the table that was behind her. Move to the next table, wipe the table that was behind her. I was compelled to ask her some questions. I asked her where she was from, what her name was, and I asked her what she liked about her job. She says, honey, I'm just glad to have a job. And I'm like, I'm thinking she's working here because she's bored, right? That's why else would somebody this old work unless they're bored? And I said, really, what do you mean you're just happy to have a job? She says, well, my husband's pension and Social Security is barely enough to cover our rent here in Concord, California. What? I asked her how old she was. She said she was 89. There was 98% sitting right there in front of me. I was so mad. I thought, where are their children? How come their kids aren't taking care of them? Their grandchildren, even their great-grandchildren. How come no one is taking care of them in the latter part of the years of their life? But here I was looking at my future if I didn't change the way I thought. I'm 20 years old. I'm looking at a woman that's about to be 90, working at a McDonald's because she has to, because her and her husband both have jobs in their late 80s because Social Security failed them, because their pension that they worked for their whole life way back when, that it wasn't enough to pay for the high rent that they were living in the San Francisco Bay Area. Why did they live there? Why didn't they move somewhere else? Because their entire family was right there. It's all that they had ever known. And as I was looking into her eyes, I'm like, Danny, that is your future if you don't change. Yeah. If you don't change the way you act, if you don't change the way you work, if you don't change the way you think, if you don't change the way you make decisions, Danny, this is your future. You'll not only be dependent on the government, but you also will be dependent on a company that'll be willing to give you a job in your latter years of life. How many of you remember in the early 90s, people in their late 80s working at places like McDonald's? How many of you remember that? There was some big campaign that went on of them opening up the doors and hiring not just teenagers to work in places like that. How many of you don't want to be that 90-year-old woman? But that is your future if you don't change the way you think. So let me give you an example of how 98% versus 2% think. Because we've all been programmed to think the way we think. How you think about everything in your life, somebody else has trained you, programmed you. And you were programmed by society, your parents, teachers, siblings, television, the music that you listen to on your iPods or whatever place it is that how you listen to music, the books that you read, the magazines that you read, the subscriptions you have, even to catalogs. All of it is programming and marketing something to you, marketing a certain standard of living, marketing a certain way of approaching life, trapping your mind into believing that this is the way things are and the way they're always going to be. That's how every single one of us have gotten to the place that we are right this minute. So let me give you an example. 98% of the population lives to be entertained. They live to be entertained. Whether the entertainment is football, basketball, soccer, hockey, or dance, or singing, living to be entertained. Movies, subscriptions to movies, video games, all of this, 98% lives to be entertained. But 2% of the population are the ones creating the entertainment. 98% of the population can be buried by the opinions of other people. That they value highly the opinions of 98%ers, which is why they stay stuck in that 98%. But 2% of the population uses the opinions of other people strategically. They will find out what the mass populace is looking for and want and be able to create a product or a service and sell it to them. Versus 98% of the population traps himself with the opinions of those that are around them instead of using those opinions strategically to find a need and to fill that need. 98% of the population spends money. 2% of the population invests money. Give you a prime example. 98%ers look for a house they want to live in, but a 2%er looks for a house that somebody else wants to buy. Big difference. 98% of the population believes that the economy determines their success. 2% of the population believes I determine my own economy, I determine my own success. 98% of the population spends money and time on useless information. 2% of the population invests time and money into learning information that will help them be more productive. 98% of the population lives in an excuse economy. 2% of the population lives in a results economy. 98% of the population looks for the way that's easy, looks for the easy, quickest way to get something done and free. Whatever's free, whatever's easy, whatever's fast, sign me up! 2% of the population looks for the way that is worth it. They look for value. 98% of the population argues and defends their mediocre position in life. Whereas 2% of the population, mediocrity is not an option. They won't even play on that field. 98% of the population is afraid to make decisions. Therefore, they have other people make decisions for them, even though they think they're the ones making the decision. But 2% of the population makes a decision and follows through with it to the end. Bottom line is this: birds of a feather flock together, and we are a product of our environment. So who are you flocking with? You flocking with some eagles, or are you sitting around with some chickens? Waiting to be cut up, quartered, dipped, and deep fried. The best way to eat chicken. The best way to eat chicken. Number three. The third characteristic of the truly wealthy, and this might shock you, is that they are forever learning, forever growing. They're learning professional skills. They're learning personal skills. They personally are developing themselves continuously. There has not yet ever been a single millionaire and or billionaire that I've had the chance to work with and absorb and study that is not a learner. They are addicted to learning, whereas 98% of the population is addicted to entertainment. Addicted to entertainment, addicted to being in front of some kind of media, which, by the way, the average person spends 9 hours a day on media. that today is YouTube or Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. All of that is included in media. Reading trashy stuff from tabloids, watching television itself, watching television from their computer or on their couch in front of the TV or on their little device from their phone. That's 98% of the population, but 2% of the population is forever learning, forever growing, forever advancing themselves, always growing and studying, finding someone who has what they want and learning from them. And they're forever learning and growing about what is important to them. And again, the truly wealthy. I'm not talking about people who are rich. We've all seen it. It's so funny to me. 98%ers love to look at the celebrities. Why? What do they have that you truly want? Lots of divorces, drug problems, infidelity, DUIs. What do they have that you want? Isn't it interesting? Oh, they got the mansion. Yeah, they're living it all by themselves. So sad, not too far from here. Prince living in a mansion all by himself with a drug problem. How sad. How terrible. Famous, talented, amazing. Lonely. How many of you do not want to be lonely, especially in a mansion? That would suck. That would make you more lonely than in a 1,000-square-foot apartment. At least you can hear your neighbors. Right? At least you can hear them fight, even. That's free entertainment. Okay. So forever learning, forever growing, you must become addicted to learning. And whatever it is, problem that you have in your life, whatever challenges that you have in your life, you can learn to fix it. You can. You see, 98% of the population is chasing a fantasy. They're waiting for things to get better. But 2% of the population knows I can learn how to make things better. I can learn how to change my finances. I can learn how to fix my marriage. I can learn how to raise better kids. I can groom my kids for success rather than grooming them for mediocrity and failure. I can learn how to take better care of my health. You can learn how to lose 100 pounds. Everybody can. Everybody can learn how to take better care of themselves. We are not in a season of life of a lack of knowledge here, friends. We have a ton of it available to us. And so here's the bottom line, is that I have found that 2% of the population, I'm talking about the truly wealthy, I'm not just talking about financially independent people, that they're incredibly teachable. It's very shocking. The wealthiest people I've studied are teachable and humble. They are not pig-headed, arrogant, prideful people like everyone thinks they are, like people judge them to be. But they're teachable, and here's why. You see, teachable people will always grow. Unteachable people are argumentative. They get stuck in a rut. They don't move ahead. And so if you're stuck in a rut right now, it simply shows you that you are perhaps unteachable. If you've been repeating the last 5 years of your life, you're unteachable. 98%ers haven't learned a new thing since they left college or high school. They're just repeating what they learned in school. God forbid, the world has changed a lot. And therefore, this is the lifestyle and the excitement level of a 98%er. Are you ready? Happy birthday. Merry Christmas. Super Bowl Sunday. There you go. That's their life of excitement. Unteachable people want to prove that they know more than all of us. Unteachable people are still waiting for me to say something good. Unteachable people know what to do about their life, but they don't do it. Unteachable people have been to countless seminars just like this and never apply a single thing that they've learned. Unteachable people usually end up in failure. Teachable people follow directions and they get results. Unteachable people love to give suggestions and opinions, though they have no stack to prove that what they're talking about gets results. But it's okay because 98%ers are entertained just by people talking. Seriously, 98%ers are entertained just by people talking. They waste their life away watching people talk. So unteachable people have lots of suggestions and opinions. Guess what else? Unteachable people are totally insecure. Totally insecure. Insecure people always have lots of opinions and lots of suggestions to hide what they do not know. They're good at spinning what they don't know, making themselves look like they know something, trying to gain respect and honor from their fellow man. Some have gotten real good at knowing a little bit about a few things so that they can sound intelligent, because 98% of us have been taught to care more about their perception of themselves and impressing other people with their knowledge instead of the results. This is why 98% end up dead or dead broke at the age of 65. The second thing that young man had told me was that if I had given him any suggestions or opinions, that he would not work with me. You have to imagine that at 19, I was an insanely opinionated person. I had so many opinions. I had so many excuses. I just knew that I would not be able to succeed. So I had to fake it until I made it, which is a lie that 98%ers usually follow. So 2% of the population, they understand the law of value. They understand that the marketplace pays for value. This is why they are forever learning and forever growing. Why? Because the market is always changing. The market is always changing. I don't care what market it is that you're in. It is always changing. So if you are still relying on knowledge that you learned 5 years ago, that knowledge is maggot-filled. It's nothing. It's not worth anything today. I'm not kidding you. Because the market is forever changing. And so 2% of the population understands. This is why they are forever learning, forever growing, forever absorbing information and learning from other people who are better than them. And if you're not surrounded by people who are better than you, you'll never be better than what you are. And most 98%ers won't surround themselves with people who are better than them. Most 98%ers are surrounded with people who make about the same amount of money they make, wear the same kind of clothes that they wear, live around the same standard of housing that they're in, same kind of cars that they drive, same amount of entertainment budget that they have, same amount of debt that they have, interested in the same politician, interested in the same kind of movies, interested in the same kind of video games, interested in the same kind of restaurants. 98%ers flocking together, continuously ending up dead and dead broke. Do you want a 98% marriage? Do you want a 98% lifestyle? Do you want a 98% house? Do you want a 98% career? Do you want a 98% body?
No.
Well, then you might want to get off their track. Right. Number four, 2% of the population has profound people skills. This is like shocking to me. They have profound people skills. What do I mean by that? Here's the bottom line. Remember earlier I was saying that 2% of the population understands that the marketplace pays for value. This is why they're always learning, okay? That your value in the marketplace is not determined by your good looks. Trust me, because if that was the case, there's something I've learned. Good looks last for about a minute. Good looks are fleeting. Every single day, you're getting older. Every single day, I'm telling you, I have learned this. Things start flopping in the wrong direction. All of a sudden, your skin starts sliding off of your skeleton. The skeleton stays the same, but everything on top of it starts to slide this way. All of a sudden, I will never forget this, is in Nicaragua, and I'm thinking I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm 48 years old. I'm in my bikini. It's just me and my husband, and I'm walking by, and I walk by this mirror, and my peripheral vision, I catch that everything was moving. Everything. And here, I put a bikini on, look at me, I'm like, oh, this is good. Yeah, as long as I'm 20 feet away from the mirror, it all looks great. But I'm walking by, it's like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to try that again. This, wow, I didn't know all that stuff moved like that. Newsflash, you are not going to stay young forever. Have you ever stood naked in a mirror backwards? Oh my gosh! How did that happen? Don't ever do it again. Once, that's it. The marketplace pays for value, and your value is not determined by your good looks. Because good looks are fleeting. It's not determined by your personality. It's determined by your skill. People pay for your skill. People pay for your skill. So when was the last time you improved your skill? Your income is going to follow your skills. And there's a few areas that those skills have to be developed. And let me show you. Here's another excuse of 98% of the population. How many of you were born on planet Earth? Just checking. How many of you were allotted 24 hours in a day? How many of you were given the assignment of work, whether that's in the home or out of the home? I was a full-time mother, a part-time businesswoman. I had 5 children. I homeschooled my kids for 13 years throughout their career. We always had 1 or 2 at home and some of the rest at a school. And then there was a season where I had everybody at home. I've survived. I graduated 1.5 years ago. All the kids are done. And they know how to read. Okay? So we all have been assigned work, right? My work at home is taking care of the house, the toilet, cooking, errands, right? Laundry, all that stuff. That's what I did as a mother. We have work outside of the home. Whether that's a full-time job or a part-time job, full-time business or part-time career. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to, let me see, who's here from planet Earth? There's nobody yet from Mars. No aliens. There's a few that might look like they are, but that's all right. I'm good. We have 24 hours in a day. Billionaires have 24 hours in a day. Millionaires have 24 hours in a day. People on welfare have 24 hours in a day. People who are flat broke have 24 hours in a day. Everyone has 24 hours in a day, right? And everybody's given the assignment of work. If you don't work, you don't eat. If you don't work, you don't eat. All right. So what is it that you do for a living? I want you to write it down in that box. Are you an engineer? Are you in real estate? Are you in IT? Do you sell vitamins or skincare, makeup, travel services? Are you an internet marketer? Whatever it is, write it down in this category called work. Now, next question. Who else does what you do? Give me a show of hands. How many of you? There's lots of people that do what you do. Right? Which means there's lots of competition and lots of people to choose from that do what you do. But I'm the most special. Have fun with that and your bad self. Here's the reality. Is that there are people who do what you do who make more than you. And there are people who do what you do who make less than you. What determines whether or not someone makes more or less? Well, I'll tell you, 98% of the population says, well, it's because I'm white is why I make less, or it's because I'm Hispanic is why I make less, or it's because they have some excuse as to why they make less. But 2% of the population understands what the variable is. You're the variable in the equation. And it's how you think, and it's the skill that you bring. That is what determines success. It's not what you do, it's how you do it. And how you do it is determined by how you think. Because as a man thinks, so is he. As you think is what you produce. How you think determines whether or not you invest in more skill set. So why is it that some realtors make $100, $1,000 a year, and some make $1 million a year in real estate? Same company, same market, everything's exactly the same. The difference is that the 98%er produces excuses as to why they are broke and why they are stuck and why they can't make it, while somebody in their same exact office is killing it with the same exact listings, the same market, the same city, the same everything, and they're making tons of money. Why? Skill, how they think, skills in what area? There's the basics, friends, to what you do. The basics to be an engineer, the basics to sales, the basics to marketing something online. There's the basics, right? So just like Michael Jordan, one of my favorite all-time basketball players to watch, amazing entertainer, phenomenal skill set, okay, who got cut from his high school basketball team, cut from college, hello. He first had to learn the basics, pass, dribble, shoot, pass, dribble, shoot, okay? Before he ever slam dunked it. I coached a basketball team for my son I think he was in the fourth grade at the time, Cabe. His fourth grade basketball team, OMG. We had this little squirt. It was about this big, right? His dad was the president of the school board. You know those kind of kids, right? He thought he was all that in a bag of chits. The kid comes in for first practice. He's trying to do all these fancy through the legs. Woo, 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 woo. Get on the bench. He couldn't dribble. He double dribbled every time. He couldn't pass a ball without passing it to the wrong team. Why? Because he was all focused on Mr. Showboat. Woo, woo, woo. You are in the fourth freaking grade. You was 10 years old. You're going to do this 300 times. Before I ever let you play a game. I don't care who your papa is. Dribble. Dribble. I let him in a game. I said, you showboat one time, you're on the bench for the rest of the game. Yes, Mrs. Johnson. Guess what he did? He showboated the first 3 minutes he was in the game. Guess where he spent the rest of the game? On the frickin' bench. So get into the locker room. I want you to do this. Brat. Big ego, no results. Basics. You have to master the basics before you ever do anything beyond that. So there's the basics of what you do, okay? Then there's people skills. This is higher than the basics. Your people skills will determine your paycheck. Your people skills determine your paycheck. Beyond that is leadership skills, which is all personal development. That's where wealth is created. Wealth is created in your leadership skills. People skills will get you six figures and above, multiple six figures. But wealth largely is determined by your personal development, who you are as a person, what your character is, how you lead people. Do you lead by fear and control, or do you lead with freedom? So when I say that 2% of the population has profound people skills, they live from a place of honor. They honor everybody, whether it's the janitor all the way up to the executive. They don't treat people different in two different places. They live from a place of character, of honoring the lowest on the totem pole all the way to the top. They serve. They serve people instead of dominate people. They go beyond the service and the product that you're paying for, and they tap into the heart of the people. I heard 9 years ago to study people, not just successful people, but to study people. And the more that you learn about people, the more unusually successful that you'll become. And come to find out that every successful person I've ever study the mass populace. They study what causes people to move, what motivates them, what causes them to make decisions, what causes them to stick something out. They study character. They study how to improve their character. And the bottom line is you're surrounded by people, friend. You are. You and I both are surrounded by people. And we will forever be surrounded by people. And the issue is that 98% of the population is chasing fantasies, thinking if I could just marry the right person, then I'll be successful. If I could just find the right job or business, then I will be successful. If I could just win the right lottery ticket, then I would be successful. This is a fantasy, and 98% of the population chases fantasy. If I could just have a better boss, if I could just have better friends, if the company could only like give our product away for free, then I would be really successful. That isn't it at all. The bottom line is that we are surrounded by people, and money comes from people. It doesn't come from banks, it comes from people. And if you suck with people, guess what? People are not going to pay you, they don't want to bonus you, they don't want to help you. But if you're good with people, and what determines whether or not you're good with people, write down what your current income is. Your income's tied to how good you are with people. That's what your income is tied to. But Danny, I'm a stay-at-home parent. Exactly. Like I said, your income is determined by how good you are with people. Because if you're a wife and your husband is the lead breadwinner and you're a nag and a hag, he has lost his power to create more money in the marketplace. If you suck with people and you're waiting for him to change, you're heading for a divorce. But the only one you can change is you and how you work with other people that are around you. You cannot change circumstances even that you're in right now. You can't. All of us are dealt a whole bunch of circumstances. Sometimes they're great, sometimes they suck. How many of you are currently in a sucky set of circumstances at the moment? How many of you are in a good set of circumstances at the moment? Okay? No matter which set of circumstances you are in the moment, how you approach those circumstances determine the outcome of them. You can't change people and you can't change the circumstances, but you can change how you see them. You can change how you approach them. You can change how you solve the problems that are in front of you. And or you can create problems that are not even in front of you, which I have found that I've done many times in my life where I created problems for a lot of years instead of solving problems. And then, you know, the psychotic person I was, is I created problems so I could solve them. That's psychotic. It's totally psychotic. So I have a question for you. How many of you live with a people? How many of you work with people? How many of you buy things from people? How many of you work out with people? How many of you drive on a road with people? How many of you gave birth to a person? Or two, or five, or 10, like I did, okay? Okay, which means you are surrounded by people. Now watch this. How many of you are having some financial challenges right now? Let's just call them problems, okay? How many of you have some marriage problems? How many have some problems with the kids? How many have some problems with the health? How many have some problems at work? There's one common denominator with every single one of these problems. You are there. You are there. You are in the center of every single one of those problems. That's the common denominator with every single one of those things. And the bottom line is that when you change, everything else changes. But 98%ers are waiting for everybody else to change in order for the circumstances to change. You're going to wait and die before those things ever, ever change. The only way those things will change is when you decide to change. You have to change your approach. You have to change how you deal with the people who are involved in those problems. Looking for new strategies. And like I said, 2% of the population is forever learning, right? And they have profound people skills. They have the ability because of their leadership level is high, because their character is strong, because they've developed themselves personally, that they don't get their ego involved in dealing with other people. They don't get offended. They don't get their feelings hurt. They're not trying to be right. They're not trying to argue like 98%ers do. This is why they make what they make. And the reason why 98%ers don't is because they largely suck with people, even though they think they're awesome and everyone loves them. Look at your yearly income, how much you have left, and that will tell you how good you are with people. How many of you need to learn some new people skills? Yes, if you want to be truly wealthy. All right, let's take a 10-minute potty break. Please wash your hands. Come back and tell me what color the soap was. Okay. Hey, as you're getting back to your seat, wanted to quickly say, well, actually, as you are all loading yourselves up, we've got Latvia, Netherlands, the UK, Australia, and Canada that are watching. If you can turn around and wave at the camera, everybody. Yes. Hello, hello. Latvia, UK, Netherlands, Australia, and Canada. You're like, what? Canada's in the room. Yes, but the encore of this event is going to be in Canada. So there'll be a people gathering, attending the event. All right, let's get back to it. Number five is that they understand and use to their benefit the law of reaping and sowing. I have to tell you that I have used this as my weapon in my pocket so many times, it's ridiculous. This is probably my go-to strategy, is understanding the law of reaping and sowing. You know, largely, I don't know about you, but when I was younger, that was kind of used against me, right? You know, you've all heard the term that whatever you hand out will come back to you, right? Okay, well, I was a very negative person, very, very negative. I wasn't one of those optimistic, positive, think everything's going to work out great kind of person. How many of you would say that my childhood obviously trained me to not think positive? No question. Not to mention that my natural personality naturally thinks negative anyway. It's just I always see what's bad first. Do you understand? I don't see what's good first. I just see what's bad first. I always ask negative questions. That's just, you know, I was much worse 30 years ago than I am today. I still have to train myself to think positive and to look at things that are good. And so the law of reaping and sowing, I've learned to use that for my benefit in lots of different scenarios. And how does that work? Well, let me just break down the law really simple for you. So if a farmer was to plant corn, yellow corn, what does he get? He gets yellow corn. Okay, so let's use that same corn. We've got the same field. If a farmer, if the farmer is Hispanic, what kind of corn does he get? He still gets yellow corn. If the farmer is African, what kind of corn does the farmer get? Yellow corn. If the farmer is Asian, what kind of corn does it get? You mean it doesn't get Asian corn? No, he doesn't get Asian corn. The Hispanic doesn't get, you know, Hispanic corn, and the African doesn't get African corn. It's just what? Corn. But see, 98% of the population has convinced themselves it is because, again, it's nothing but excuses, which are well-planned lies. The reason why I don't make more money is because I'm black, I'm white, I'm Hispanic, I'm Asian, whatever, or I'm a girl, or I'm a boy, or I'm too young, or I'm too old. Do you understand? So, but the law of reaping and sowing has no gender, has no religion, has no race, none at all. The bottom line is there are people of your race, of your religion, of the color of your skin, and of your gender that are highly successful. And highly successful in your field. So, but it is the conditioning, especially today, we are in the most divisive generation that we have ever been in, at least in our country, in the United States of America. We are more divisive than we have been in a long, 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 long time. And we have conditioned people to use their race as an excuse, or to use their gender, or their gender preference, or their sexual preference as an excuse as to why they cannot succeed. It's called divide and conquer. And so the bottom line is that what we hand out will come back to us. That's the bottom line. What we hand out will come back to us. And so what does that mean? Well, let's just say that you have five customers, all right? Let's say you have a business, you have five customers. If what you sow into those five customers is, I only have five customers and they're just not very loyal, they don't really spend very much, they haven't reordered, okay? What have you sown into those five customers? What have you sown into the five customers? Negativity. What else have you shown to the five customers? Not appreciating them, not valuing them. So you have devalued the five customers that you have. Okay? There's somebody else that has five customers, and they are celebrating the fact that they have five customers. They are saying, I love my customers. And if you love your customers, how do you treat your customers? You treat them with love. You treat them with honor. You treat them with respect. But if you don't value your five customers, how do you treat them? You ignore them. You complain at them. You might even be nasty to them because they're not doing what you think they should do. It's the same with your five distributors, your five employees. It might be even with your children and even your spouse. You see, what it is that you value, you'll bring honor to. That which you devalue, you will ignore. What you feed will flourish. What you neglect will die. And so the bottom line is that people like to use an excuse of gender, sexual preference, color of skin, twang of tongue, slant of eye as an excuse as to why they are not successful. But the bottom line is that if a Hispanic farmer plants corn, he gets the same corn as a white guy gets corn. So it's everything of what you sow into the ground of life. And you're sowing something every single day into the ground of life. And so everything is determined by your actions, what you do, and the spirit of which you do it in. Amen. And how you value that thing. So there were seasons in my life where I hated my husband, Hans. I hated him. And guess what? He hated me too. So it was fair. We hated each other. And why do we hate each other? We spent no time with each other. We both were chasing business 18 hours a day. We valued business more than we valued our relationship. So we neglected one another. And in that neglect, there was no sowing of love or value into the relationship. So we became estranged. We were hugging the sides of the bed. All I was doing internally, I had a burr under my saddle. Do you know what that is? Well, just imagine what it might feel like. Let's say that, okay, I don't know about where you live, but where we live in Texas, we've got these little things that you pick up from walking in the grass. Okay, and they are these thorny, little tiny things like this. If you're wearing jeans in the grass, it's going to get all over your jeans. You know what I'm talking about? And if you try to grab it off of your jeans, it's like a needle poking you. You can't grab it. You have to use tweezers to grab it off. Imagine you got one of those in your underwear. You're like, did she really just say that? Yes, she did. You got one of them in your underwear. How does that feel? What will you do? You try to get rid of it, right? Some people live with it. It's a burr under their saddle, and they just fester over it. So I found myself festering, like, he doesn't do this, and he doesn't do that. And he doesn't pick up his freaking underwear off the floor. What does he think I am, his maid? I do everything. I have to do all the cooking. I have to do all the cleaning, and I have to make the money. Why did I marry him? It was funner when he was my boyfriend. It was really fun when he was my boy toy. That's the truth. That's how we started. No joke. He was 18. I was 22. I hated men. I hated men. I hated men. I hated men with a passion. I trusted nobody. And as soon as we got married, I treated him like all the men who hurt me in my past. And the tapes that was going on in my head was everything that he was not. And I was writing him nasty letters. Get the heck out of my... I didn't use heck. And I didn't use hell either. I started with an F. Out of my house. You're worthless. You're useless. I can't even believe I'm married to you. You contribute nothing into my life. I would write him letter week after week after week telling him to get out and that he was nothing. Evil woman. Evil woman. And I reaped what I sowed into him. The more I destroyed him with my mouth, the more he didn't believe in himself. The more he couldn't produce an income. The more he couldn't love his child. The more he couldn't love me. I was sowing hatred into him, and I was being given hatred back. So it's not about marrying the right person. It's about being the right person. It's not about finding the right people to work for you. It's about being the right person that people want to work with. Why is it that some people can go build a huge customer base and have business flocking to them left and right, more business than what they can handle, and others can beg for business? It's all about what you are sowing into life. What you are putting out there, what it is that you value. And when you don't value something, you neglect it or you destroy it. So which relationships are you destroying with your thoughts, with your attitude, with your mouth, with complaining, or even with being undependable, inconsistent, and having no initiative, but waiting for somebody else to treat you better just because you're alive? Here's the bottom line. How many of you feel like you need more encouragement in your life? There's one way to get it, just one, and that is to give it. If you are encouraging people that are around you, especially the ones you sleep with, one, hopefully. If you're married, especially, just one. One, just one is my recommendation. If you're married, there should just be one you're sleeping with. I know your kids might want to snuggle with you now and again, but you're getting my point. The people you live with, encouraging those. It is so simple to not encourage the one you've committed your life to and the ones you've given birth to. It's so easy to deny them encouragement, respect, honor, and love. And then we feel lonely. We feel like they're just picking us apart. We feel that they're not doing anything to support us. The bottom line is if you feel unsupported, you have to look at when was the last time you sowed support into someone else? If your spouse doesn't support you, it's a glaring fact that you have not supported them and what was important to them. Most people only support people that support themselves. Most people only give support if it benefits them directly. But the bottom line is this: that is conditional and that is manipulation. And if you want to be supported, then freely you've got to support other people. You have to support their interests. Even if your spouse has an interest in a sport that you don't even like, show the honor, the value, and the respect like you did before they became your spouse and pretend like you like the stupid game. Seriously. If it is that you need more encouragement, give more encouragement, especially to your spouse and your children. Your coworkers, the ones that drive you crazy, especially support them, encourage them. Because what do you have to gain for loving those that are lovable? It's loving the unlovable is where you actually get a reward. That's higher level of leadership. That is appropriate people skills if you're wanting your income to grow, because your income is directly related to how you deal with other people, because money comes from people. So if you want referrals, for example, how many of you need referrals? Well, you need to be referred into a better job. You need to be referred as somebody who has a product or a service. You need referrals as to people referring good talent to come to your company. How many of you need referrals? When was the last time you gave one? Because at the exact amount that you're giving referrals is the exact that you're going to receive multiplied. And if you're not giving referrals, then multiply the amount that you will not receive as well. So in this life, we get what we put in. Number six. Is that 2% of the population takes responsibility instead of taking offense. We live in a highly offended world today. We live in a world that is filled with hostility and frustration and anger. More than ever that I have seen on the 48 years that I've been on the planet, and mind you, I grew up in a hostile environment. I grew up in a painful environment. And people are more offended by the littlest things. I have seen the least amount of maturity in our society today than it was 20 years ago. People were more mature 20 years ago. People were more peaceful 20 years ago. People were more kind 20 years ago than they are today. How many of you would agree with me? People are more hostile and easily offended. People get offended by the littlest thing. There are people in this room right now who are completely offended by what I have on my body, even though I am covered. You should have seen what I wore on stage 20 years ago. Try a blazer with no shirt on underneath it. With one button and nothing but a bra. Skirts that I would get shortened. She has a slit in her skirt. Ooh, and there's a knee. Woo! Woo! Wrinkled, bony, saggy. Check out those thighs. Woo! Wrinkled, varicose veins, white freckles, age spots. A little ashy. Wait, varicose veins right there. Boom, cellulite. She pulled up her skirt. Grow up, man. 2% of the population is not easily offended. Is not easily offended. People today are offended by people's color of skin, by their political preference. People are so easily offended today, they cut off family members because they didn't vote for who they thought should be president. Who the have we become? Who have we become? We literally have the maturity level of a third grader. Seventh grade max. We get offended. If somebody doesn't like our food, we get offended. If someone doesn't dress the way we dress, we get offended. If someone doesn't like our product, we get offended. If somebody assumes that someone's offending someone else. Literally. I was having a conversation right here from the stage teaching something. It got back to my aunt that I was mad at someone I wasn't even talking about. And she was all offended because she thought I was talking about someone that I was not talking about. I'm like, first of all, you weren't even at the event. second of all, who the heck was there that you even knew? It's like ridiculous, the things, the crap people make up and go, oh, Danny's ticked at you. She was just talking about you from the stage. She was talking about your house. She was talking about your clothes. Wow. I was? Dang. I didn't even know I was. It is shocking to me how immature we have become as a people. 2% of the population takes responsibility instead of picking up an offense. 2% of the population does not walk around offended. 98% of the population, out of their offense, they dress. Out of their offense, they argue. Out of their offense, they defend. Out of their offense, they assume they know how you're thinking. Question, how many of you don't even know what the frick you're thinking half the time? You don't even know what you're thinking, but your friend knows what you're thinking. Pull your head out of your colon. People are walking around thinking they're God today. Oh, I know what she's thinking. I know what he's thinking. Oh, I know what they're talking about. Who do you think you are? You egotistical, pride-filled third grader. Third graders are more accepting than adults are today. Seventh graders are more accepting and more mature than adults today. People are offended by the fact that I can talk about God and say frick at the same time. Some are offended that I'm a woman. That I'm a woman, you're offended. That my hair is pulled to my side, that I have some bright lipstick on, you're offended. That my toes are showing, yes, and I have toe cleavage today too. Watch out. Ooh, it's so sexy. I am almost 50. There ain't much that's sexy on this chick anymore. To anyone else besides my Hans, who's blind. To me, like, I have this picture of him rolling over one morning and looking at me going, oh my gosh, what happened? Poor guy. I'm gorgeous to one man, and that's all I need to be gorgeous to, and as long as he stays blind, we're good. As long as he stays blind, I'm good. You know, I think God created the eye thing that you can't see the closer you get for a reason. It's because when you get close to kiss your spouse, they can't see anything. It's really awesome. I'm going to count that as a gift. But in all seriousness, are you easily offended? Are you easily offended? Do you get your feelings hurt all the time? If people don't agree with your opinion, are you offended? If people don't support what you do, are you offended? If someone believes in a different political candidate, are you offended? Are you offended by someone who doesn't worship your God? Are you offended by someone who doesn't worship your denomination of your God, which is nothing but a man-made division of the Bible? Totally man-made, totally jacked up, every single one of them. Not a single one of them are 100% of the truth. Yet you believe that if someone doesn't believe your Catholic God, your Lutheran God, your Presbyterian God, your Baptist God, your Jehovah's Witness God, your Mormon God, your non-denominational God, your Unitarian God, your alien God, your no God? Are you offended by people that have a God that isn't your God? What about your 35,000 different gods that you think only Hindus worship, but you Christians do too, and you don't even realize it? Are you offended if I say the name Jesus, 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 Jesus? Are you offended if I drop an F-bomb right now from the stage? I thought you loved me. going to get you offended? What burr is under your saddle? What chonies do you have all caught up in a wad? You like being a 98 percenter? Because 98 percenters walk through life offended. And because of their offense, they live in a prison, never being able to learn from anyone else unless that person serves the same God, or at least they think serves the same God, or at least has the same values. That is such a low level of leadership development. You'll not create wealth doing that. What happened to acceptance of differences? You see, man's idea of unity is everyone looking the same, acting the same, talking the same, believing the same. But the great designer, the creator of the heavens and the earth, whether you believe in him or not, or you might think she's a she, and you just got offended because I called him a him, pull your head out of your colon. No one is just like you, and no one is just like me. I am never going to be you. I'm never going to be what you want me to be, and you are never going to be what I want you to be. Period, end of story. But 2% of the population understands the differences in other people and celebrates the differences, the cultures, the mindset, and the will and the emotions of that man. But 98%ers want to change everybody. So real unity is diversity in harmony. How do we get harmony? It's by acceptance. It doesn't mean we have to believe what they believe, but we can accept that someone else has a different opinion. And because they have a different opinion, doesn't make them an idiot and me smart. Do you base your smarts and your confidence on how stupid people are around you? And is your confidence based on how stupid you think they are? Or does that really make you the stupid one because you really don't know? We've become a hostile, temper tantrum bunch of brats as a society. And it's being fed to us from the top down, and we're eating it up, every single morsel of it. As we have learned to divide ourselves from our fellow man, we're not walking in honor, we're not valuing each other, and we can't figure out how come we're struggling. So take responsibility instead of taking offense. Take responsibility for your lack of leadership and begin to see the differences in every race. Begin to observe the differences in the culture. Begin to celebrate the differences that your spouse has that you don't have and that your children have. Begin to celebrate the differences in your staff or your distributors or your customers. Begin to sow encouragement and value and honor and respect in those places. And when you screw up, do what 2% of the population does. That says own it. I'm sorry, I screwed up. Please forgive me. That was not my intention, but I obviously hurt you. And learn from the experience. But 2% of the population are about the only ones that take responsibility for their failures versus 98% of the population wants to hide their failures. They want to hide their past. They want to hide from their past. They want to hide all the failures that they've done in the past with their all the mistakes they've made in business, their financial mistakes, their relationship mistakes, and they want to present themselves as something that they're not. Living very, very lonely inside. Number 7. Is they have a burning desire to succeed. 2% of the population has a burning desire to succeed, whereas 98% of the population bows down to fear, doubt, and unbelief. Whereas 2% of the population, that no matter how far down they are, no matter how much debt they have, no matter how many mistakes they've made, no matter what their past has attempted to tell them about who they are and their future, 2% of the population, that burning desire says, I've got one more shot. And if they've said that 100 times, they're going to say it for the next 200 times after that. Amen. That 2% of the population, like 100% of the population, was born with something great. And they were born with a design. They were born with a desire. And they were born with a destiny. 2% of the population recognizes what that destiny is, that vision is, and they go after it. 98% of the population uses the circumstances between their desire and the destiny to cause them to stay stuck and eventually have the desire die. You were born with all the right parts in order to succeed, every single one of them. When you were knitted together in your mother's womb, there was a great designer that thought of you and thought of a destiny in mind. There was a great designer that when he put you together, or if you believe it's a she, planted also in your design a desire that matches your design. And you came to First Steps to Success because you have a desire to succeed. What's the name of the seminar? First Steps to Success. If it was called First Steps to Basket Weaving, how many of you would not be here? And why would you not come to First Steps to Basket Weaving? Please tell me. How many of you do not have a desire to be a successful basket weaver? Okay. If you did have a desire to be a successful basket weaver, you would be in a different seminar. You wouldn't be in this one. But you're here because it's called First Steps to Success, and you want what? You want what?
Success.
You want what?
Success.
You want success. And there are five very important things that you were born with that you probably didn't even know that you were born with. It's in your very DNA that it actually takes to succeed. And the great designer knew exactly what you needed to succeed. Number one, enthusiasm. You were born with the gift of enthusiasm. You were born with it. The question is, what have you done with it? What did you do with what is in your DNA? Enthusiasm is in your DNA. The word enthusias in the Greek, the root word of enthusiasm means to be like God, to be God-like. Now, we see that God, in all of his splendor and grandeur, obviously is enthusiastic with our thunderstorms, hurricanes, tsunamis. We see excitement all over the place. And here's what we do know. We also know that every child was born with it.
Yes.
Every child, no matter what the personality of the child was. I had my own case study in my own house. Every child, every two-year-old is enthusiastic. I have a 9-month-old grandson. He cannot help himself. He's got to be puddling all over the place. When I'm holding him, he's kicking his legs and he's moving his arms. He's moving. Taking it all in. My grandkids run through the house no matter how many times I have told them to walk. They can't help themselves. If you were that analytical child, you had enthusiasm. If you were that fun child, you had enthusiasm. If you were that challenge-oriented child, you had enthusiasm. Even if you were one of those quiet children, you still had enthusiasm. You see, enthusiasm creates anticipation and expectation. And without expectation, we're dead. Without the anticipation of something great that is coming, that is on its way, we're dying inside. We're bored inside. Right now, it's summertime, and kids often say, "I'm bored." But every one of us were born with the gift of enthusiasm, and it's impossible to succeed without enthusiasm. Number two, you were born with the gift of persistence. It's in your DNA. How many of you were told that if you asked for that again, you'd be spanked? How many of you asked again? How many found a different way to ask, found a different angle to ask? Okay, I gave birth to a kid that's like that. His name is Roman. Roman is about to get married. He's 19. He'll be 20 in September. This child came up with every which way to ask for something. Can I have some ice cream? No, and now guess what? My daughter has given birth to Roman again. His name is Anthem, though. And Anthem is just like Roman. He sings at the table when he's eating. He cannot be quiet. He talks in his sleep. He talks to him and he gets up. He wakes up super positive. If you won't talk to him, he'll talk to himself. If he's in the kitchen, I'm cooking. And if I'm not talking to him, he'll pull out two spoons and have two spoons talk to each other. If he's standing in the corner because he's done something wrong, he'll talk to the wall. He cannot help himself. He has to talk. And this child comes up with every way. This is the craziest story. It's 10:30 in the morning. Nona, I'm hungry. Well, hi, hungry. It's nice to meet you. My name is Nona. Nona, but I'm hungry. Can I have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? It's 10:30 in the morning. Lunch is at noon. We have an hour and a half before lunch. But Nona, I like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I like them a lot. I'm so glad you like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, Anthem, however, comma. Lunch isn't an hour and a half. Okay. Nona, what kind of jelly do you have? I have raspberry and strawberry. I like those jellies with peanut butter on a sandwich. Can I have one of those? Anthem, lunch is in an hour and 15 minutes. In an hour and 15 minutes, you can have a sandwich. Okay. He comes back 5 minutes later. Nona, do you have the bread that's kind of tan or white? Anthem, I have wheat bread with peanut butter. Yes, with peanut butter and jelly. Yes, with jelly. Can I have one? Anthem, lunch is in an hour and 10 minutes. Anthem, here's the deal. Do you know what happens right after lunch? No, it's nap time.
Oh.
So right after your peanut butter and jelly sandwich, it's nap time. 5 minutes later. Nona, I don't know what's wrong, but I'm tired. Really tired. Can I have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Oh my God. So you want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and you know you have to go right to bed after your peanut butter. Yeah, I'm tired. Can I have a peanut jelly? Okay. He went to nap an hour early. He got his peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You're born with the same thing. Every single one of us were wired with persistence. No one had to teach you how to be persistent. I'm going to say it again. No one had to teach you how to be persistent. No one had to teach you how to be enthusiastic. But what we've done through life, because we were not trained and conditioned correctly on how to manage disappointment and discouragement and failure, what we did with our enthusiasm and our persistence is we traded it in for the fear of being disappointed. So we don't get our hopes up and we don't try because we don't want to have it not turn out the way we want it to. So before we even get started, we quit. Before we even entertain the vision, we create excuses in front of it as to how it's not going to work. All in the fear of, well, I don't want to get my hopes up because I don't want it to get discouraged. If it doesn't happen, you know, I'm just going to be depressed. So I'd much rather not be excited to begin with. So I have a question for you. How many of you have tried that plan to not get excited in hopes that it doesn't work? So I'd much rather be excited and have it fail than to not be excited and still fail. You get to pick one or the other. There's no other which way around it. So when persistence, look, people, they run into a barrier, they run into someone saying no, and all of a sudden they just talk themselves out of, well, it's just not supposed to happen, forget it, I shouldn't even try. So when you were a child, no one had to teach you how to be persistent. So it's inside of you. You've traded it for stupidity, literally, that you call maturity. Number three, you were born with the gift of adventure. You were born with the gift of adventure. How many of you climbed the tallest tree just because? And how many of you got to the tallest tree, you tried to make a sway? How many of you snuck out? How many of you climbed the what do they call that thing, the rain gutter to get on this on the roof? Yeah. How many of you ate a worm just because someone triple dog dared you? How many of you ate something you knew you weren't supposed to? And why do we do this? It's for adventure. But as we get older, we eat the same thing for breakfast 25 years in a row. And we're afraid to try new things. When was the last time you had a pillow fight? They're fun. When was the last time you changed up your routine, did something different? We have a tendency of getting into a rut, and we can't figure out how can we have no inspiration. What has happened to your adventure? Well, 98% of the population traded their adventure for movies that are adventurous. and theme parks. Instead of living a life of adventure, they buy it with a $10 movie ticket or a $50 amusement park ticket. Stand in line for hours, get on 6 rides, spend $1,000. It's awesome. You were also born with the gift to get over it. You were born with the gift to get over it. You ran, you fell down, you scrubbed the skin off of your knee, and you kept running. Adults sue the concrete company. 98%ers sue the concrete company and say, well, there was a trip hazard. I'm suing. God forbid you ever go to a foreign country. They do not have the same laws that America does. Staircases, cobblestone streets, you'd be tripping all over the place. But you were born with the gift to get over it. You were. And you were also born with a childlike faith. You believed that Santa Claus was coming in December. You believed that this big old fat guy, somebody just got offended. Big old fat guy, someone just got offended. Big old fat white guy, someone just got offended. 52-inch waist was coming down a chimney this big. And he had gifts and he knew whether you were naughty or nice. He knew whether or not you deserved the bike. He knew what your heart desired was. So it changed your behavior. So you didn't trip your brother as he was running through the hall and you didn't pull your sister's pigtails for the whole month of December. You didn't interrupt your teacher. You sat there with your hands folded and you were just completely paying attention. You were a good little boy, good little girl for the whole month of December, hoping to get the bike, or if you were a girl, you wanted baby Chrissy who peed and her hair grew. You believe so wholeheartedly in this white guy that's like 700 pounds. He's flying through the air with a reindeer with a red nose. You believe that. You had no problem. You believed it so much that you put out cookies and milk. Unless it was the 60s, it was carrots and celery because he was fat. That's back in the world where you could say fat. But today you can't say that anymore. You were born with that childlike faith. You were born with the childlike faith that you believed that a fairy from Never Never Land knew when your tooth was loose. And you tied a piece of dental floss around your tooth and the door, you slammed the door to pull your teeth out. You put it underneath the pillow because you found out that your friend got a quarter. You were going to see if it was going to work. If I take my tooth, I put it in there. Wow, it's magic. Today, it's $5. Inflation's amazing. You believed in a bunny that laid eggs. Plastic ones. Plastic ones. Pink, blue, and yellow plastic eggs. You believed in all of this. And it caused your behavior to change. And yet, right now, when it comes to believing that you could actually create wealth, right now, when it comes to believing that you could pay off all of your debt in 5 to 7 years, including your mortgage, you have a hard time believing. Right now, you have a hard time believing that you can actually get promoted and bonused on your job. You have a hard time believing that you could start a business and become successful. You have a hard time believing that you actually could accumulate wealth little by little. You actually have a hard time believing that your marriage is able to be saved and restored and brought back to harmony and peace and passion and tons of fun in the kitchen, the garage. Some of you are getting uncomfortable right now because your kids are in the room. You know what you do when they ain't around. Anyway, you're having a hard time believing that you will succeed. And you have to ask yourself why. Because you were born with all the right parts to succeed. You were wired with everything it is that you needed. Everything I just told you is necessary in order to have success. And here you had it as a young one. And something changed between then and now. And what changed is 98% programming. You were programmed to believe differently than what you were wired to believe. So here's the facts. You were designed with all the right parts to succeed. You have a desire to succeed. Therefore, the destiny that is in front of you is success if you choose to go back to your original design. If you choose to go back to what you were given as you were knitted together in your mother's womb. and you choose to walk away from 98% programming, and you choose to walk away from 98% habits, and you choose to form a new path that is in front of you, then your destiny is everything that you're saying that it is that you want. And it's up to you to follow that which is already within you, that was already given to you, and to retrain yourself to be who you're called to be, your original make and model, versus this new version that's been sold to you by a people who profit from you. So that brings us here. Why? You see, an eagle was designed with all the right parts to soar, and a chicken was designed with all the right parts to be eaten. You weren't designed to be a chicken. You were designed to soar. And just as an eagle was designed with all the makeup of the wingspan, there are two birds. One walks and clucks. The other soars. And the destiny and the desire of that eagle is to soar. The design is to soar, just like you. What you're designed to do. So the question is, how much longer do you want to not be what you're called to be? How much longer do you want to not follow in the destiny that is set before you? How much longer do you want to stay in that 98% pile of excuses that keep you stuck in a rut, alone, fearful, wondering, and worried about your future? You're going to have to give one up. You've given your destiny up for a long time. Now it's time to give up the big fat ego trip that you're currently under. You see, all that training creates so much pain. All the things from our past, because we were not equipped to succeed when we hit failure, but instead we got hardened. Instead we began to blame. Instead we began to point the finger and judge. Instead of taking responsibility, we took offense. And with offense comes hurt. With offense comes defending our position. And we don't even like our position. All of this creates an ego. You see, when we were younger and we got hurt, we created a protection shield. We created maybe even a whole nother person that we thought would be stronger than we were in life to handle the failures, to handle being made fun of, to handle the words maybe that were spoken over you, because our words are seed. And I heard things like, see what happens when the abortion lives. You heard things like, why can't you be more like Joey or Sarah? How many of you heard things like, I wish you were never born? How many of you heard things like, you can't ever do anything right, you'll never amount to anything? How many of you were compared to other people that were better than you when you were young? All of this was seed planted in you, and you have formed belief systems around that which was told about you, or even told about other people. And we've carried these beliefs with us. And this thing called an ego that we created all by ourselves as a young person to be able to handle life. How many of you were made fun of in school? Every single one of us, I'm sure, were made fun of at some point or another. We've suffered some kind of embarrassment. And when we've done that, we usually crawl up inside, build walls around our hearts and our minds. And we say, well, I don't ever want that to happen to me again. And we try to become something different than what we are. And we notice that maybe Joey doesn't get made fun of, so we try to act like him. We try to dress like him or her, like Sarah, you know, the popular one. We try to be someone else because we think, well, they have a good life. They've got it all together. I want to be like them. If I could be like them, then I won't suffer anymore. Then I won't make these kind of mistakes. I won't be made fun of. It's all a big lie. Because everybody on the planet walks through hardships. And what most of us do, largely due to ego, is we do everything we possibly can to avoid getting hurt again. We do everything we possibly can to avoid making a mistake again. We do everything we can to avoid the anguish of failure. And so pretty soon, we're locking ourselves in a closet. And our life pretty much every day is just get up, do the same routine, have our breakfast, go to work, fight traffic on our way to work, get to work, do our same task, be done at 5 o'clock, get in the car, fight traffic on the way home, get home, make dinner, fall asleep in front of the television, get up the next morning, do it all over again. And not much excitement to look forward to. So we get in this rut, all trying to avoid pain. And ego is created because of pain. As a little child, with no knowledge, no understanding, no wisdom, we box ourselves in with beliefs, saying, I don't ever want to get hurt again. I can't trust people. Obviously, when I was molested at 3 years old by a Hispanic man, right away I decided I cannot trust Hispanics. Then when I was 17 and a half, I found out I was one. Yeah, that blood is in my veins, and I'm very proud of my Nicaraguan heritage. Very proud of that in me. But there was a time that I hated it because of the hatred that I had to the one who violated me when I was young. Because as a young 3-year-old, I made the decision that I can't trust people with dark skin, dark eyes, and dark hair. Being beaten by the man who raised me. Same thing. I can't trust white people with light hair and green eyes. My mother, who I told her when my father molested me, don't worry about it. He was loaded. He won't do it again. Happened for the next 4 years of my life. So I didn't trust my mom. I didn't trust women to protect me. I didn't trust anyone that was around me. And in my mind, ego spoke so loud and clear that no one is ever going to help you. No one is going to protect you. No one is going to be there for you. Everyone is just going to screw you over. And that's what I brought. That's the mindset I brought into my first business at 19 years old. How in the world was I supposed to be able to work with the general public if I trusted nobody and assumed that everyone was out to get me? Not a great way to try to build a business. But this thing called ego, you have to weigh your ego with your bank account and figure out which one you want to grow. Weigh your ego with your goal. Which one do you want? Because you can't have both. Ego will keep you broke. You have to break free from ego in order to succeed. Ego likes to be a know-it-all. Ego likes to blame. It's filled with pride and arrogance. It's fearful. It's afraid of being rejected. It's afraid of being embarrassed. It's afraid of making a mistake. It's afraid of failures. Ego also likes to be in a comfort zone. And I have found through life, especially in the last couple of years, that a comfort zone is nothing but a danger zone. Nothing but a danger zone. There's no life in a comfort zone. There's no excitement in a comfort zone. And your destiny is not in a comfort zone. The comfort zone is going to bring you to a death. Ego is self-righteous. Loves to argue their righteousness, and they compare their righteousness to somebody else's lack of righteousness, which then makes them feel like they're righteous. But their righteousness is nothing but filthy rags. Ego is judgmental. And judgmental people are not safe. And if money comes from people and you're judgmental, you just found out why you have so few customers or clients or distributors or staff. Because judgmental people are scary to be around. Judgmental people are critical people. Judgmental people like to condemn other people. Judgmental people are non-accepting, and people can feel it. Ego loves false humility. Loves to act humble when all reality their hearts are filled with pride. Ego and excuses are the best of friends. And they always say this: this is not an excuse, but. If you have to preface and say that this is not an excuse, but it is an excuse, own it. Own it. Be responsible for the excuse that you're letting out of your mouth. It is an excuse. Deal with it Get underneath it. Solve the problem that you're creating with your excuse. Ego also is a people pleaser. Its entire life is centered around making everybody happy and is living in fear that if somebody isn't happy, then all of a sudden everything's going to blow. Ego loves to justify their current set of circumstances. Ego also is jealous. That which you're jealous of, you can never learn from. Jealous people are lonely people, fearful people. Jealous people are critical people. Jealous people are caught in a trap. They're miserable, absolutely miserable. They tear people down with their eyes, their mouth, and their mind so they can level out the playing field to bring someone to the low place in which they are living in. Ego is fake, loves to pretend like it's shy sometimes, or not all the time. Danny, I don't have the right personality, I'm shy. That's an ego trip. Playing the shy card is an ego trip. Whatever it is that you use as an excuse to not reach your destiny is an ego trip. Ego really cares a lot about everybody else's opinions. Meaning that if someone says, you shouldn't start that business or you shouldn't go for that career, that person says, oh, okay, you're right, I shouldn't. Ego likes to also play martyr, the unworthy, I'm worthless card. I'll take care of it at 3 o'clock in the morning. I have so much to do, but I got it. I can handle it. I got it. Full on martyr. Ego loves to remember other people's failures and spew them from their mouth, reminding their children of their failures. Don't you remember what you did last year? Reminding their spouse. You did that last time. Reminding their staff. Why can't you seem to get this right? I've told you 3 times. Ego is condemning of themselves and others. Controlling. Manipulative. Pushy. Also lazy. And procrastinates. Ego can also be sarcastic, making fun of people and making a joke out of other people. Ego can be rebellious and insubordinate, just will not walk in the chain of command, will not. Distrust authority. And emasculates authority. Ego also is exempt. They've done all this before. They've already had healing from their past. They've already taken off their ego. This is way below them. And ego can be one that is that carries a lot of animosity. They're slanderers. They sow discord and dissension. Divide and conquer. So I don't know about you, but I've got some faces of ego. And if you want to succeed as I want to succeed, then you have to confront ego face to face. And this is where you really take a look in the mirror and you say, what has to change in me? I gave you 7 so far characteristics of the truly wealthy. And these are people who weigh their egos with their goal. They walk in humility, and where there is ego, there is no humility. So you may have found some things just from that little checklist that I just gave you, that if you take a hard look at yourself and you ask yourself the question, what needs to change in me in order for me to succeed? What is truly hindering me? I promise you, it's not another person. It's you and how you see that other person. And how you see them is not from today, but it's largely from your past. It's largely from who you were formed after you were knitted together in your mother's womb, all of the disappointments that you had, the decisions you made as a young person to create this so-called protection shield that has not helped you, but it has hindered you. So I want you to listen to this song that we wrote about ego, And I want you to ask yourself the question, I even want you to write this down. What has to change in me in order for me to succeed? What is hindering me personally? What is stopping me from getting to the place that I want to go? So what has to change in me? Ask yourself that question. Write down the answer. I gave you a number of different things, perhaps, to look at and ask yourself, am I that way? Am I arrogant? Am I critical? Am I judgmental? Am I jealous of other people? Do I lack true confidence, real confidence? Am I self-righteous? Do I make people uncomfortable? These are questions to ask yourself, because again, money comes from people. And all of these things I just listed hurt your earning potential. So go ahead and listen to this, and we'll go from there.
I'm so tired of living a lie. Of picking up the pieces of my life. Of my life, of my life, of finding out that I'm the one who thinks I've got it figured out, of finding out that I'm running fast and going.
I wanna be me.
How many of you want to be free? We say we live in a free society, but we're not free. We just celebrated the Declaration of Independence. What have we done with our freedom? We've turned our freedom into debt and stuff that binds us, trying to live up to the Joneses who are broke, who are fragmented and miserable. What have we done with our freedom? Everything that we've talked about this morning, these seven characteristics, and we'll get to the eighth one after this exercise. These are all simple things that can be done, but it's ego that we choose to live with instead of doing the simple things that it takes to become successful. We rather argue and defend. We rather prove than be real. We rather be right instead of doing what's right. How do we make ego go away? Number one, you confront it, which is what we just did. We took a look in the mirror. We took a look at who we are and who we're not. And if you get real with yourself, and wherever it is that you find that place where ego is ruling and reigning over your life, you confront that, it doesn't have the same power over you. I'm going to walk you through a step and an exercise to help you confront that thing called ego. I've been doing this thing called confronting ego for about 28 years now. And there's still more. And the more I dig, the more I find. But I know this, I am not the woman I used to be. I'm not the person I used to be. I'm not the child I used to be. I'm nowhere near. I know this, that I should be dead for the things I suffered through in my past, which I haven't even talked to you about. I should be dead. But I'm alive and well. And why? I choose not to be buried by ego. I choose not to ignore ego either. But I choose to find what is stopping me and what is hindering me from being who I'm called to be. And I hit it head on. And I've walked through this exercise many, many times, and I'm excited to be able to introduce you to the same exact skill set that I've used to overcome, to walk away from my past, to walk away from the things that are hindering me, to walk away from bad habits that have kept me stuck. So we're going to get into groups of eight right now. So if we start from here, we go 1, 2, 3, 4. This is four groups of people. Can you raise your hand if you can see me right here? This is straight all the way to the back. Raise your hands if you're the dividing line of the four. This is four people. They're going to turn around and face the four that are behind them because 4 plus 4 is 8. And then it's going to go 4 again, straight down. Then that's going to be a 4 that faces the 4 behind them, and that makes 8. So we're going to get into groups of 8. And we're going to have time to confess what needs to change in us. After we're all done, you're going to sit and you're going to write down what you learned about yourself and what you learned about others. Because if you work harder on you than you do your business or your family or anyone else, you're going to be unusually successful because you're at the center of all of those things. And this is also your chance to study people, to learn more about people than you do your product or your service. You'll be unusually successful. This is what 2% of the population does. They understand people. So this is a chance to learn about you and to learn about the others that are around you, because we are literally a picture of what is outside of these doors. So here's how we're going to start. Volunteers are going to go and tap each row that's supposed to turn around and face the row behind them. So the first row is going to turn around and face the second. We need to do this with silence. Otherwise, trying to get 1,000 people to be quiet is a big challenge and takes up time. So if the volunteers can go and tap the rows, as soon as your row is tapped, stand up, turn around, face the people behind you. If there's someone standing in front of you, stand up. So everyone's going to be standing. You're going to be in a group of 8. You're going to take hands and create this circle of 8. And then We need one person in each circle to raise their hand. One person in each circle, please raise your hand. One person in each circle, raise your hand. Now I want you to tap the person on your right because they're going to go first. Now, person that you're going to go first, now what I would like for you to do is locate your person to the right. And it's going to keep going to the right, to the right, to the right until everyone has gone. So it's eight of us that, there's eight of us that are going to do this exercise. Now, here's how we do the exercise. You're going to say what your name is, where you're from, and what needs to change in you. This is not time for a dissertation. This is not even time for a paragraph. It might be one word, two words. What needs to change in me is I need confidence, okay? This is not time to tell your life story. This is simply time to simply say what needs to change in you in one short sentence, not two, three, four, five, just one short sentence, what has to change in you. I said earlier that ego is there because of pain. It's out of pain that we created this protection shield that has failed us. It has not helped us to succeed. It is hindering us from our destiny of success. So you're simply going to do this. I promise, you're going to confess, I promise I will not hurt anyone this weekend. Please do not let your self-righteous ego speak up and say, I don't ever hurt anyone. You're a liar. You just hurt people by lying right there. Please don't say that I don't ever hurt anyone ever. And I won't hurt anyone ever for the rest of my life. That's also a lie. You just set yourself up for failure. You're going to hurt people leaving this event. But I want you to strategically point your mind to not hurting anybody here this weekend. Instead of bringing judgment and being prejudiced this weekend, you're going to lead with honor and respect of your fellow man. That if somebody wants to dye their hair purple, which seems to be rather popular these days, it used to not be 20 years ago, but anyway, so if they want to dye their hair purple or wear a mohawk, you're going to go right on you, good on you, mate. I like it. Yes. Instead of judging them for their preference of style, that this weekend you're going to choose to accept people right where they're at because you're going to choose to accept yourself for right where you're at. We reap what we sow. So you're going to point yourself in the direction of, I promise I will not hurt anyone. And then you're physically going to reach down to your ankles and take off your ego to throw it out the door. So listen carefully. Don't reach for your sciatic nerve excuse. Don't reach for your bad hip excuse. And don't reach for your I'm embarrassed to do this excuse. Simply follow directions. Simply follow directions. If you will not do that, it shows that ego is still present. That's all that it shows. That if you won't follow directions, and that if you won't bend down to your ankles instead of your excuses and take off your ego and throw it out the door, it means that ego is still on you. You still care about what people think of you, which is ego. Trying to impress other people with whoever the heck you think you are. So I'm going to go ahead and go first. So again, what your name is, where you're from, what has to change in you. I promise I will not hurt anyone. Reach down to your ankles. I take off my ego and I throw it out the door. And then it goes to the next person. This should take no more than 5 minutes. We've been doing this for a long time. As soon as you're done, sit down, begin to journal what it is that you've learned about yourself and what you just learned about other people. Do not clap after each person is done, and do not clap when the circle is done, okay? It disrupts the room. There's a lot of people that are going to be talking, and it's important that everyone gets the chance to hear one another. Please don't be thinking about what you're going to say before you say it. Please just listen and honor the people that are in front of you, okay? So I'm going to go first. My name is Danny Johnson from Texas, and what has to change in me is my disgusting relationship with perfection that has hurt my life too many times. I take off my ego. I promise I will not hurt anyone, and I throw my ego out the door. It's your turn. So when I said that 2% of the population takes responsibility instead of taking offense, that when they have screwed up, when they have a flaw, they don't run from it, they don't hide it, they confront it, and they take responsibility for it, and they work on it. That's what we're doing right now, is we're facing some truth about ourselves. We're facing some reality about how we're living our life. So first is to confront it, but then there is a way to kind of seal it and to find out where it came from. Largely pain, whether it was caused directly by someone else that came at us, attacked us, or by the set of circumstances in which we lived in. Pain can be caused by the environment in which you were raised in. In my, for example, being neglected, my parents chose drugs over us. And so there was some serious neglect that I had there, feeling unwanted, feeling that we were a burden on our parents, that we were in their way. There's a whole lot more that goes along with that we'll talk about another time. But the point is that then we strive through life trying to be something so that we earn people's love or we earn their respect or honor. And so ego, beneath ego, there's always people or circumstances that have created this pain. Number eight that I have found to be so profound about the truly wealthy that I've had the chance to study is they are quick to forgive, and they are not people who are resentful or bitter, but they forgive very quickly. Not only other people, but themselves. Why? How many of you have ever had a financial failure? How many have ever had a relationship failure? And how many of you are your own worst critic? And how many of you have beaten yourself up again and again and again because of those relationship failures or those financial failures, career failures? Have you had career failures? And you've lived in regret. Anybody ever lived in regret? So regret creates fear, and it causes you to not try again. Eventually, if you continue with that same mistake again and again, eventually you're just not going to try anymore. And that's where persistence is out the door. And then you live in this pathetic reality of mediocrity that you absolutely hate and you're miserable. So forgiveness is the key to breaking free from that cage and that prison that we've created in our feelings for ourselves. Forgiveness literally is the key to freedom. So when you've had business failures, especially as many as I've had, so many financial failures, but more importantly, I've had far many more relationship failures than I've had financial failures, which the relationship failures definitely aided in the financial failures for sure. When you have had so many failures there, then you just isolate yourself and you become someone that just doesn't want to be around people. So there's two things that you need to start with forgiveness. One is you need to forgive yourself. You will become more and more self-condemning and more self-critical as the years go by if you don't forgive yourself. You'll become more and more afraid. If you are someone who's been afraid of meeting people, trying new things, you fear rejection, this is simply because you have not forgiven yourself for things that you have failed in the past. The second is I want you to write down, close your eyes, write down the first name that pops into your mind that you need to forgive. Write down their name. It could be someone from 30 years ago. It could be from something that happened with someone when you were 3 years old, 5 years old, 10 years old. It could be your parents. It could be a school teacher that made fun of you. And it could be something that happened last week. It's best if it's something from way back when. Please write down those names. Write down your name in big, bold, 3-inch letters, huge on your page. And then write down that person's name that popped in your mind. Now, you may have thought that you have forgave them, but if that name is still there and is still coming up in your heart, that means that there's more work to do on that. Unforgiveness is the root to all of your fears, every one of them. It's the root of all your insecurities, anger, frustration, fits of rage. It's the root of your judgment, your lack of self-esteem and self-worth. It's the root to all of your excuses, unforgivenesses. You see, unforgiveness glues you to the past. It holds you bondage to the past. And 98% of the population lives in the past and repeats their past over and over and over again. Unforgiveness is the root to your inaction, your lack of self-motivation. It's the root to your self-hate, depression, oppression, and suppression. It's the root to being defensive, argumentative, arrogant. Unforgiveness is the root of rebellion, insubordination, and stubbornness. It's the root of justifying your actions. It's the root of your jealousy, comparing yourself to others, needing to be in control, being a know-it-all. It's the root of sarcasm, criticism, and of yourself and others. It's the root of people-pleasing. Unforgiveness is the root of selfishness, including self-righteousness. Unforgiveness is the root of all of those things. Unforgiveness creates bondage. And bondage is a prison and keeps you from success. So we're going to play a song that we wrote about forgiveness. While that song is playing, I want you to pretend that you are sitting across the table from yourself, and I want you to forgive yourself. Yeah, I want you to talk to yourself. You do it all the time. You do it all day. You even do it in the middle of the night. So I want you to sit across the table from yourself and say, I choose to forgive you for, and say the thing that you did that you are not proud of. I forgive you for, and list it. Then you say, I choose to release you, and I don't hold you accountable anymore. You owe me nothing. Because you know what comes out of unforgiveness of yourself is that you now have this perfect persona of what you have to live up to in order to love yourself. And if you're not perfect, you won't love yourself, but instead you'll hate yourself. And if you hate yourself, you will hate others. You heard the old golden rule, right? Treat others the way you want to be treated. It goes a step further. Love your neighbor as yourself. If you don't love yourself, you obviously can't love your neighbor. Your neighbor being your spouse, your kids, your coworkers, and the people that live around you, that you work with and live with. There are a lot of people in this room that don't love themselves. We've been taught to hate ourselves. Self-hate results in obesity, drug addictions, alcohol addictions, workaholic addictions, shopaholic addictions. Every destructive thing that is out there available to man is rooted in unforgiveness. So you sit across and you forgive yourself. You say, I no longer hold you accountable. I release you. You owe me nothing. And I choose to bless you. And I want you to speak positively over yourself. Encourage yourself in that moment. When you get to the person that you need to forgive. My dad showed up on my list for 6 straight years. The man that raised me. There was a lot to forgive. Being grabbed by the throat, shoved up against walls to be cursed at, kicked across the room, dragged by my hair across the room, watching my mother be beaten, watching my sister's heads being beaten through the sheetrock, watching my mom being beaten so bad that she's in the emergency room fighting for her life with her teeth knocked out of her face, 2 giant black eyes, unrecognizable. And completely lifeless on the floor as the ambulance is called to save her life. There was a lot to forgive. Being molested, there's a lot to forgive. But I was really persistent for those 6 years. I'm so grateful that I did. Now, you may say that he didn't deserve that, but I was in a prison of hatred. And I didn't trust men because of my hatred towards him and because of my judgment towards him. And I didn't like to be around people that did drugs because of my judgment against him. I judged all people the same who did drugs. I judged all alcoholics the same. I was so prejudiced against people because of my heart of unforgiveness towards my dad and my mom.
I am so grateful that I was given the opportunity, like you're given the opportunity right now, to say, I forgive you. You're being given a gift right this minute to come out of a prison that you're living in, that I was living in, that I'm still living in for things that I'm not even aware of at the moment. Because as you keep searching, you find more stuff because there's so much pain. Now, some of you didn't grow up the way I did, so there's not a whole lot of pain that you got to deal with. Bless you, my sister, my brother. But we've all been hurt and had all kinds of disappointments all through our entire life, and we will for the rest of our life. This is why bitterness is a practice or forgiveness is a practice. And those two percenters I've studied, they are quick to forgive. They live with a clean heart. They're not judgmental of people. It's shocking. But they're very accepting. And you can't be accepting of people with unforgiveness that's in your heart. So when you sit across the table like I did with my dad, you know, in my mind, in a room just like this, saying, I forgive you, and list the things that he did, the things that he said, calling me poop for brains, telling me I was worthless and I was stupid and I was ugly and I was fat, would never, ever amount to anything. I forgive you, Dad, for coming in my room when I was 12 and touching me. And I choose to release you. I choose to release you. You owe me nothing. You don't owe me an apology. You don't owe me anything. The debt is canceled. And I choose to bless you. When you go through this forgiveness exercise, even talk about how you felt, even when you're forgiven yourself. Because we're responsible for our feelings. No one can make you feel anything. We choose our own feelings. I'm in charge of my feelings. You're in charge of yours. So if you talk about those feelings, like I chose to feel filthy when you touched me. I chose to feel cursed. I chose to feel disgusting due to what happened there. But right now I choose to forgive you and I choose to release you. I no longer hold you accountable for my feelings. You see, I used to blame my dad for my feelings. My feelings are mine. Your feelings are yours. Take responsibility for your feelings and choose to forgive, that your feelings will be released and so will that pain that's all caught up with it. This eighth thing is the most important thing for your success. More important than anything else we've talked about. So if you want to get unstuck, you want to go after your destiny, you want to be free, then use the key that I just handed in your hand. Use the key that's in your hand to succeed. Listen to this song. Time to forgive yourself and the person you wrote down.
Just know that forgiveness
this thing, forgiveness is the sweetest thing. When you let it all go, it's the sweetest thing that you could breathe again. When the one next to you is the one that's caused you pain, or if you're drowning
for the first time. This is your very first time here. Awesome. Those of you that have been here, this is your first time here. I want to invite you and encourage you to take the opportunity to forgive some more people than the two that you just wrote down. If you are somebody who's been wounded by, hurt by a woman, and this is your first time here, please stand up. You've been betrayed, stabbed in the back, lied about, slandered, stolen from, cheated on, abandoned, neglected. First of all, I have to tell you, I respect you because you knew that it was a female speaker. It's really hard to have that kind of hurt and be able to learn from a woman. And I'm sure that I represent that woman for many of you. Maybe that hurt caused you to see that woman as arrogant and mean-spirited and brassy and dominant. So I really respect you for being able to come. It took a lot of courage for you to be able to do that. We're going to give you the opportunity because what happens is that when we have unforgiveness towards these women in our life, we have a really hard time being able to work with women, even raising. If we gave birth to a female, have a hard time connecting because there's this judgment and hurt inside of our heart towards women. If we're in business and we have this issue with the women from our past, then we can't get female customers. We can't seem to recruit the right kind of women to work with. Everything just keeps repeating itself. We just keep having the same failures with women over and over and over again. And we certainly can't go to an intimate relationship with a female. We're always guarded. So if you're standing, I want to give you the opportunity to forgive the women that have wronged you knowingly or unknowingly. We've all hurt people, sadly. We all have. Those of us who've been hurt, we turn around and we hurt others without even trying, without even realizing it. So I want to give you the opportunity to forgive all the women from your past by having a woman come up to you and ask you to forgive them on behalf of the entire female human race. So the women that you are graduates and you are sitting, you know exactly how to lead this exercise. Please go to the people that are standing and ask them to forgive you. And those who are standing, you must say, I forgive you, I release you, and I bless you. So there's a lot of people standing, so please, graduates, get up and do the job. The same for the men. If you've been wounded by a man, neglected, ignored, stabbed in the back, cheated on, abused, molested, raped, any of it, please stand to your feet if this is your first time here. Been wounded by a man. It was many more people who stood wounded by a woman this time. It's amazing. So the male graduates, if you can go and ask for forgiveness on behalf of the entire male human race, of every person who's ever wounded any of these people, please do that now. We're going to be breaking for lunch, and there is an assignment for you at lunch to go and be by yourself, not with the people that you came here with, but to have some time by yourself, writing out what your vision is for your life. Take some time to be quiet and think about, what's my vision for my marriage, for my health, for my children? Like, who I am as a married person, who I am as a parent. What is your vision for your career? What is your vision for your finances? Each one of those categories. It doesn't have to be long and lengthy. Just write something down. Because most of us don't have one for those areas. Most of us have never even thought about it. Yeah, what is the vision for me as a married person? How do I want to be as a spouse? What do I want my marriage to look like? Because if you don't focus on something, you're going to get nothing. You're going to get failure. So success is, it takes diligence, it takes vision, it takes focus, and it takes skill to get there. And so for the marriage, for you as a parent, for your career, for your finances, your health is really important. How many of you don't want to be the people with the nightstand with 17 bottles of medications, right? How many of your parents are like that? They got a bunch of bottles of medication, right? They're on high blood pressure medication, and they got, you know, three other medications to help the side effects from the high blood pressure medication. Do you understand what I mean? So you don't want to be that person. Well, you will be that person if you do what they've done. Do you understand? So write out your vision for your life. Okay, we're going to be back here at 2 o'clock. The next session starts at 2 o'clock. Wait. Give yourselves a hand. Good job. Good job. The first morning of First Step Success is very challenging.
We try to move all the crap out of the way so that we can get to some teaching. So this afternoon, you're going to be working on some people skills, discovering more about yourself, what motivates you, what motivates others. You're going to be learning how to increase your income and increase your value in the marketplace this afternoon. And then tonight, we have a spiritual equipping session that's taking place that is going to be a doozy and a half. I won't tell you about what it is until later. So be back here 2 p.m. Enjoy your lunch by yourself with your pen and your paper and a sandwich. Wait, sorry. There's sandwiches outside for $5.50 to $7.50. Grab and go sandwiches. There's the Burnham restaurant that has lunch for $9.50. Use those options if you didn't pack a lunch. See you at 2:00.